Mark Carmen, Adam Hogue.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
This is The Beat.
Good afternoon. Welcome in. This is The Beat. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen from the Allstate Showcase Studio, downtown Chicago. Good to be back out of Bourbonnais for about 12 hours. I think I'll be here and then back down.
Well, it's great to see you, Adam, and I'm glad you made it back.
It's
and
been a warm 3 days, buddy.
We
had about a three-year run of, you know, it's a different kind of heat down in Bourbonnais. It's just a different kind of heat.
Bear heat.
Brad Biggs was ripping the weathermen yesterday for being wrong on the forecast. The reality was they weren't wrong. He just didn't account for the humidity. It's humid down there. And
that seems like displaced anger from Brad Biggs, if I may.
Look, I'm not complaining about the weather. I give those guys a lot of credit for practicing in that stuff. But early storyline, little out of shape, those Chicago Bears.
Really?
I mean, I'm not trying to criticize them. This is how it usually is. You show up to camp. You haven't played football for 5 weeks. It takes a few days to get your camp legs under you. But guys were cramping up yesterday. It was pretty warm. It's been an adjustment period.
Well, this is year two for Foxy. Yep. And you have to forgive me. I'm easing into my football intensity. I know that this was a big week this week. Guys making signing contracts around the NFL, like the New York Jets eking up Ryan Fitzpatrick to be their quarterback. That was a long holdout, and different stuff going on down at Bears camp as far as John. You know what? Actually, but before we get into the team, there's really only one thing that I care about.
And by the way, I'd like to say congratulations to our PR staff for whooping the media.
Not even a contest, right?
So wait a second. I'm sitting at home today getting ready for the show, and I'm listening to all the sound you're sending in. And John Fox with that can we isolate that laugh?
It's like evil laugh.
I mean, it's full evil. You are a member of the media, and you played the Chicago Bears PR staff in basketball, and you got, what was the score?
Okay.
Because this isn't, like,
I'm not allowed to report what goes on down there.
Oh,
so.
Oh.
I'm going to use that to my advantage right here.
If Foxy was talking about it, I think you actually are allowed to speak on this.
So we played four games. The first game may have been 15-0.
Wait a second. Okay. Now, 5-on-5?
Yeah.
Full court?
Yeah. Cross court, but mostly, you know.
So the width of the court.
Yeah.
They have a basketball court down there? It's a college, right.
Olivet Nazarene, they have multiple courts.
So, okay, so you're
nice, so you're nice, so you're athletic,
so you're hooping on a nice court. You got a good ball, I bet, nice
We had a really nice NAIA basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was you and who that didn't score 1 point against the Bears PR staff, which, by the way,
I shouldn't be talking about this.
Well, we're just going to do it. Let me ask you this.
The quarterback has already been speaking about this publicly, by the way, it's out there.
Right. Well, I think it's very important to point out before we go any further that the PR staffs for any team are horrendous athletes. And the media who sit there and talk about sports all day, like, most of them can't even make a layup. You, on the other hand, I feel like can make a layup, have played things. I at some point, I would have thought you would have just taken the basketball and scored and not gotten shut out. But apparently you didn't.
Well, that's what happened eventually in games 2 and 3. You know my game. I'm more of a wing, use my long arms on the outside and run up and down the court.
Yes.
So I'm more of a guard. I'm more of a slasher. I was like the tallest guy on our team.
Yeah, but you weigh 140 pounds.
I know, but I had to be down on the block. And my conditioning level, speaking of not being camp ready, definitely not camp ready.
So wait, who played from the media?
So the offense wasn't really there in the first game because I was playing defense and trying to rebound, and I couldn't go both ways.
Okay, so you barely made it down the court, and you were like a bad defender. You were like,
no, we were all, yeah. Scott Hagel can drain threes, man.
Scott Hagel. All right, fine. I can live with Scott Hagel hitting some shots.
He was just draining threes.
You telling me that Jim Christman's scoring on you?
Jimmy's got a little bit of a jumper.
No.
Yeah, he couldn't.
Come on.
He can hit the 15-footer.
Okay. How is he getting open? How is Jim Christman, who I love him, always been good to me, but come on, slower than slow. Has to be.
Look, I'm not here to throw anyone
His
under.
His wife, on the other hand, she, I mean.
What?
Lissa can move. She's. I've taken her spin class at East Bank. She's amazing.
I'm not throwing anybody under the bus because I'm a team player. But let's just say it was kind of 3-on-4.5.
Who was on your team? I'll figure out who was absolutely worthless.
Adam Johns, my podcast partner on Intentional Grounding. You can listen to our training camp episode.
I feel like
right
Adam
now.
Johns could maybe do something. Go ahead.
He's a shooter.
Okay. Can't dribble?
No, he can dribble.
Okay.
Adam can play.
Okay.
Dan Wiederer.
I feel like Dan Wiederer should be able to play.
Dan's a player.
And then what else? Oh, yeah. You, Wiederer, Johns. This team's getting shut out by Bears Media. It's never happened in the history of... Go ahead. Who
Pat
else?
Pat Finley.
That doesn't sound good. Pat Finley can't play. I see Pat Finley walking around Northwestern with a kid and having a nice time. And Pat's a great, great, great man and a phenomenal writer, but there's no way Pat Finley can play. Okay, go ahead. Who else?
Mark Potash was it?
Potsy?
Potsy was...
Oh, come on.
He's got a little bit of a jumper.
I'm sure he could run down the court and tell you that you guys are 0 for your last 7. The guy knows stats better than anyone. So who brought the ball up?
It was kind of a combo of Johnsy and Weeds and me.
Johnsy, Weeds, and... Well, okay. So I assume you're able to get the ball over half court. I'm sure they weren't pressing you and pick up hoop.
So they have a new member of their media relations staff who played Division III basketball. That guy was kind of a problem.
Okay, now we got... Now yeah. Who's that?
His name is Aaron Clark.
Okay, fine.
He just started.
All right.
I think they brought him in just to beat us in basketball.
All right, fine. They got a D3 hooper against...
Hagel's draining threes.
I mean, you got a problem.
They just hired Brandon Faber from the Blackhawks, who was...
Brandon Faber cannot play.
But he's a post player.
Yeah, he's got a little size.
He was strong in the post.
Doing
and
what?
We didn't know what the heck we were doing.
All right, when's the next game? Is there another game?
We're ready to run again.
I'm
Look, man, I showed up today. That first game was 15-0. I'm like, I got to get on a different beat.
3-1-2.
I was like, I got to go cover the Blackhawks or the Cubs. I can never show my face again at Hallis Hall after what just happened. But we redeemed ourselves, Mark Carmen.
You did?
We never won, but we got within 2 in the third game. It was 13-11.
Okay.
And then we were about to win. I felt good about game number 4. I'm like, we're going to win this one. And Jim Christman and Brandon Faber quit.
No.
Quit.
Just too tired?
Too tired. I don't blame them.
Okay, so, all right, well, so you guys had a rough start, and then you started to rally back.
Right. We were like...
All right, it's not as bad as I thought.
We started as the 2014 Bears, and by the end, we were the 2015 Bears.
Was anybody talking nonsense?
And then if we'd gone to 2016, we were a playoff team.
Was there any vocal? Yes, I feel you. You're the 20s. You're right.
If
on
we
the
had just had that one more game. I mean, so Foxy shows up today.
Yeah, how does he know? The media just goes and runs to Fox and tells him we smoked the media.
Cutler heard. Cutler heard about this yesterday.
Who's buddies with Cuddy? Chrisman, that's his guy. Probably goes running to Cuddy and says, "Hey, we beat the media," and they love it.
Well, no, they knew about this before the game. I mean, this was like big hyped up event yesterday.
It's like the highlight
in
of camp.
Bourbonnais.
Have you ever done this before in any other camp? Because I don't remember ever
we
hearing
we used
about
to play
this.
A little bit, not against them. Well, I guess the media relations guys would be there sometimes, but usually they used to open up the gym to us, and we would play almost every night. But then Phil Emery came in and
there's gotta
place
be,
got shut down.
There's
got
to be a secret somewhere in that gym. Well, do you want to apologize to anyone for your performance or... You know,
I want to actually. I do. I want to apologize specifically to Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune. I had plenty of layups. I also missed about 5, and I probably cost Dan about 4 assists.
You missed 5 layups.
It was rough.
Wide open. Yes,
a couple were wide open. A couple were hard, like reverses. It was hard, man.
When you haven't played, you haven't played. I get it. Believe me. Hey, listen. I can't say anything.
I'm not making excuses.
I had my Saturday morning tennis today. Me and Big Bob. Final 6-0, 6-1. Big Bob.
Are you turning around? Because you were on a...
No,
you're still on a slump?
I was, and I wasn't. Now I'm not.
I'm just saying, it's a tough day, man, when you got the head coach of the Chicago Bears and the quarterback just ripping you.
Informal question, does it make you less likely to listen to the show knowing that Adam Hoge was a member of a media team that got smoked by Bears Media Relations 15-0? Now, they did rally back, but you just heard Hoge say he missed five laps. Are you less likely to listen to this program now? 312-981-7200.
I still shot over 50%.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But well, there were just... But when I'm talking... When me and layups, finish.
Well, it's a concentration thing, and it's a comfort thing. If you're rushing it and you're not, you know, feeling yourself, I can understand how you would miss them.
I miss, like, a couple, and then it gets in your head, and then you're an idiot. That was me.
It will get in your head. I'll tell you a thing coming back here on one of Team USA who was at the United Center last night, somebody that you can maybe relate to.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Cubs fans, collect your next Cubs Fathead sticker this Sunday. When you grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco, this week's sticker has a special offer from Blue Lizard Sunscreen. We got a lot to do on the show today. Real stuff from Bears camp. We've got a bunch of interviews that Adam has. And, yeah, the Cubs picked up a reliever this week that we're going to get to. And a lot there's Bull stuff, too, with Dwayne Wade. A lot to do. 720 WGN.
Not even a contest, right?
So Aroldis Chapman on at Wrigley just gave up a two-out, two-run double. Mariners leading the Cubs 2-1. That hurts.
That's not good.
That hurts. I'm Mark Harmon. You're Adam Hoge. This is 720 WGN. The B will do a lot of baseball in a bit, but... outside of, by the way, one a great text from our buddy in the 224, Dave, who says, I bet Fessler could make more layups, and he probably reserved the court, Team Fessler, which is a great memory of tennis times gone in the past there. Thank you, Dave, for that. So, okay, outside of losing, give us, we're gonna talk to Nazi Muhammad at right after the 3:30 news. Former Bull, was with the Thunder last year, Chicagoan. Always great to talk to Nazi, who's got a casino night coming up on Friday, August 5th, which is incredibly cool for the Nazi Muhammad Foundation. Nazi's always good to talk hoop with. We'll talk some D. Wade. And give us a little synopsis in the 3 minutes we have here on highlights of camp so far.
Well, the Kyle Long injury is fortunately good news. So let me put it this way. My foot hurts from playing basketball last night. That's more serious than Kyle Long's calf injury.
Okay.
He's going to be just fine. But it was a scare. I mean, it was something that they had to get an MRI on and make sure it wasn't, you know, more significant. He did have a boot on his leg for 2 days, but he was out there today watching practice from the sideline. No boot, not limping very much. So, you know, I don't think he'll be back tomorrow, but I don't, you know, it's something that's not serious at all.
Well, and he's the happiest guy in camp, right? Back to right guard.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like he's super motivated to, he's talking out to the, well, I guess not to the players in the NFL, but the lack of respect that the Bears are getting from all the prognosticators, right?
Well, specifically his unit, the offensive line. Pro Football Focus did a story ranking all the NFL offensive lines, and I think they were second to last or third to last. And that's based off the way they grade them, which isn't a perfect science, and I know plenty of NFL personnel who don't really agree with the way that Pro Football Focus does their grading. But good, whatever motivates you, and but they need to stay healthy. There's not a whole lot of depth there on the O-line. So I understand why it's a question mark. But if Charles Leno Jr. at left tackle takes another step forward, if Cody Whitehair, second-round draft pick, turns out to be pretty good, Hronis Grassou takes a step forward, that's a big question mark, too. At center, you know what Kyle Long is, and you sign Bobby Massey. This is a big boomer-bust unit to me. They could either be really good or be awful.
How about your guy Cuddy in his first dealings with the media this year?
Yeah, what happened? What?
Well, he's just so... There's no excitement. He downplays everything. He always questions whether or not they have enough. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just, I'm listening to it. It's like, well, yeah, I know. I mean, we have a huge adjustment period with Adam Gase leaving, and Dowell Loggins is here, and yeah, he's got some stuff. But you know, we're gonna have to work through that. And you know, Martellus Bennett, you know, yeah, he was a little quirky guy and all, but this is what Cuddy said. He was a quirky guy and all, but I mean, that was a really good player. I mean, he helped the team, and we don't have him anymore. And yeah, no, I mean, listen, though, those guys, Kevin White and Alshon, I mean, we gotta get him on the field.
Well, you said you got to be careful with those guys.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Like, they're going to blow out at any second.
Well, is he wrong about anything he's saying?
No, he's not, but he's the quarterback, man. You're the leader. You got to be positive.
I didn't get the sense he was being negative.
Well, he was too.
I just think he was trying to temper expectations.
Why? Who cares?
Have you seen the Bears in the Jay Cutler era?
There's no expectations for this team. We all think you're going to stink and be 8-86.
I don't.
What do you think? 10-6? 7-9?
9-7.
9-7. Okay.
Stinks.
Okay, well, fine. Oh, okay, I take that back. We all think that
I don't even think they were that bad last year.
Okay, we all think you're going to be a middle-of-the-road team. No one's putting Super Bowl champion on your shoulders. There's nothing to live up to here.
Hey, Eddie, and by the way, I talked to Eddie Goldman today, making predictions, top 10 defense. We'll hear from him later on in the show. You can hear that.
Well, they could be.
Well, absolutely. They were actually top 15 last year. People don't realize that.
Right.
And they should be a lot better.
See, I'd rather hear that. Let's go. Let's get some positivity going on here. Eddie Goldman, top 10 defense. Okay, Eddie Goldman, I feel you. Let's go, Jay. Hey, Dowell Loggins, you guys don't know Dowell Loggins. Dowell Loggins is going to do a great job. I'm super excited to be working with Dowell Loggins. And Kevin White, he looks phenomenal. I'm not worried about his workload.
Okay, well, that's one guy he hasn't tempered expectations on. He talks about Kevin White like he's
good.
Superstar.
Good. All right, we'll do more Bears coming up. Nazi Muhammad, former Bull, doing great work for the community, the Nazi Muhammad Foundation, right after the 3:30 news, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carman. He is Adam Hogue. Thanks for being along on a Saturday afternoon. Hopefully you're having a great weekend. The 5th annual Nazi Muhammad Foundation, the full court press against cancer. It's coming up this Friday, 7:30 in the evening till 1 in the morning, because Nazi just does it right. He doesn't stop at 11. He doesn't stop at midnight. We'll go 1 a.m. I was there last year. Just an incredibly cool event. Lots of fun things to do. And the former Chicago Bull, latest with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and has been in the NBA forever, joining us on WGN. Nazi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Good to have you on, as per always. Five of these now for you. Are you are you going to play again this year, Nazi Muhammad?
I don't think so. I haven't totally decided, but I'm looking at other things to do as far as post basketball career, but I always try to stay in shape, and you never know, somebody call that I like, you know, I'm always willing to at least listen.
I mean, I saw you walking out of East Bank the other day. You looked in shape to me. I think you can, you know, do something still, right?
Oh yeah, I'm I enjoy working out, so I'm in good enough shape to get in basketball shape. There's a difference. But we'll just sit back and see. I'm not really looking to play, but I love the game, and I'm always ready.
Well, what went into your decision to come back out of retirement and play with the Thunder this year?
It was just perfect situation. I had a great experience when I was in Oklahoma City the last time. We made it to the finals and lost to Miami. Me and Sam Presti, we have a great relationship. I have Kevin Durant was my good friend. Nick Collison's a good friend, Russell, Serge. It was just, I knew that we were going to compete for a championship. It's just everything lined up and met the criteria that I wanted in order to attempt, try to come back.
So, okay, let's talk about Kevin Durant, who, I back in the day, I was working in Austin, Texas when he was a freshman at UT, and I've known him since he's been in the league, at least a little bit from a media standpoint, and I've always really enjoyed him. And everybody's got a right to make their own decision, but I got to be honest. I mean, I guess I'm like a lot of people that was just disappointed that he left Oklahoma City, because I loved watching him and Russ play together, and I thought that they had a great chance to win it all. Did it surprise you, Nazi, that he left for one, and what do you think went into the decision?
I mean, honestly, nothing surprises me with in sports. So being around for 18 years, not a whole lot surprises me, especially, you know, guys choosing to play elsewhere or teams choosing not to bring guys back. You know, it was a little disappointment at the beginning just because I know how much he loved Oklahoma City. I know how much the fans loved him, how well the organization treated him and his family. But at the same time, you know, me being a basketball player, me being around and seeing all the different things that happen in sports, he deserves the right to choose to go play where he wants to play. You know, it's definitely going to hurt the team, and it's the fans were just, you know, just really, I can't even put the words together as far as how they felt about it. But at the same time, it was crushed.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, that's Kevin. You know, Kevin, he didn't do it and choose that decision lightly. He put a lot of time into it. I've talked to him. I saw him yesterday. I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times since. And, you know, he's going to really miss it. And, you know, but, you know, he's chosen to go to Golden State. And that's what he has to go out there and try and win the championship and make the best of it.
How fun was that series this year against Golden State? Because, man, we had a lot of fun watching it all the way to the end.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was fun when we were winning. It's not fun now. Now it's, you know, it still hurts. It still hurts knowing, you know, we were so close to making it back to the finals and having a chance at the championship. But, I mean, as far as from watching, being involved with it, I mean, that's one of the great series, just with two great teams, with great young superstars kind of going at each other. I mean, that was better than some finals have been.
Nazi Muhammad, the former Chicago Bull, with us here on 720 WGN. He's got the fifth annual Nazi Muhammad Foundation, the full court press against cancer casino night this Friday, August the 5th. If you want to get involved, differentshadesofpink.org is a website. You can also go to nazimuhammad.com. Just one more on KD, Nazi, just so I understand. I mean, the way I was looking at it, you know, from Kevin's standpoint, he's got a chance to win a championship in Oklahoma City, but he's got a chance to win multiple, you know, for however long in Golden State. Less pressure, a better city to live in, most people would say. And, you know, and he's going to make the same money. So, I mean, if you ask somebody, hey, well, you're going to make the same money, but I'm going to give you less pressure, and you're going to probably, your work is going to be a little bit easier, and you get to live in a better city, most regular people are going to sign up for that. I mean, that's kind of how I thought he looked at it. But then when you heard stuff that he didn't get along, that there was something to do with Russell as well, that they weren't great together, which I you know, you would know that obviously a lot more than we do. I mean, what do you think was the main decision on why he left?
I mean, I think first off, I don't think him and Russell's relationship had anything to do with him leaving. When those guys have played with each other the last 8 years, you know, they were friends. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say they were best friends, but they're friends, and they're definitely great coworkers. But as far as what went into the decision, I mean, I've talked to him, and I know some of what went into the decision, and I've actually given this more thought than probably I've needed to, considering that, you know, it doesn't directly affect me. But I look at it a little bit deeper than just the things that you just stated. I look at it also as you got to realize Kevin has been, he's been in Oklahoma City since he was about 19, 20 years old. And, you know, when you're that age, he came in as a kid. And when you've been in one situation for a long time, this is just my speculation.
Right.
When you've been in one situation for a long time, it's natural to wonder how it would be other mm-hmm. places. And I think this opportunity, he's paid his dues in Oklahoma City. I mean, been to the Western Conference Finals 4 out of the last 6 years. I think he was just, you know, ready for a change, and he liked what Golden State presented. And it also, you know, the other criteria as far as him, like you said, being able to compete for a championship, being able to compete for multiple championships. You know, I think what hurts the average fan is a lot of people had Oklahoma City to possibly come out of the West next year. So, but I don't think that was something he looked at when making that decision as far as coming out of the West next year with the team. He just wanted to go to the place that he really, you know, wanted to go to.
Nazi, he wasn't the only one that moved cities and surprised a lot of people. Right here in Chicago, Dwayne Wade made a big-time move leaving Miami. You know, a fellow Chicago guy like yourself making the move back here. What was your reaction when you heard about that news?
I was surprised. I actually was surprised. That surprised me almost more so than Kevin leaving Oklahoma City. The reason I'm surprised is, I mean, I just got so used to Dwayne kind of sacrificing and winning championships and doing whatever it took to kind of stay in Miami. I just figured he was going to do whatever it took again to stay there. But the allure of coming home and playing for your hometown is something that's just kind of hard to turn down. You know, I've experienced it, so I know, you know, kind of how – I mean, our situations are different, but I know the feeling he had about wanting to play home for, you know, the team you grew up watching.
Fair enough. Hey, Nazi, can that work? You got one basketball, you got Jimmy, you got Dwayne, you got Rondo, and, you know, from my standpoint, you've got Fred coaching him, who probably likes to be a little more hands-off, or definitely likes to be more hands-off than Tibbs would be. I think Tibbs would be kind of driving that bus, and maybe that would help him, maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. Do you think that this can work? Can they be a playoff team, middle of the pack Eastern Conference?
Of course it can work. I mean, I look at it like when Steve Kerr took over Golden State. You got Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, Harrison Barnes. People were wondering, can that work? I mean, they won a championship, made it back to the finals. I mean, I'm not comparing those group of guys to each other, but I'm just saying you just never know how a team is going to gel as far as in a locker room or how they're going to feel about playing with each other. So until we all sit back and see that, that's when we'll really know if it's going to work or not. But as far as can it work, it definitely can work.
Does Dwayne Wade change that locker room in your mind? Because, I mean, I feel like he walks in there, multiple championships. You kind of got to follow his lead, even though everyone's saying it's Jimmy's team. But, I mean, this is a different dude to have in your locker room out of nowhere.
Oh, definitely. I mean, his resume speaks for itself. The young guys, especially having a young team, and I just read this yesterday, with 10 guys under 3 years of NBA experience.
Yeah, Gar's pumping that.
Yeah, especially having such a young team, you need a guy like a Dwayne Wade who can really tell the guys what it takes to win. He's telling guys what it takes to win from experience, who can show them what it takes to prepare and keep your body right and be ready to play an 82-game season night in, night out, and play a lot of minutes. I mean, Dwayne is going to be able to teach Jimmy how to be a leader and be a better leader. Jimmy has a high amount of respect for Dwayne because they both went to Marquette. So I think what all the things that he brings is going to be real valuable to that locker room.
Nazi, you played for Tom Thibodeau. I'm fascinated by him going up to Minnesota and kind of running the show here with a very young team that has a ton of young talent on that roster. How do you think that's going to go?
I expect it to go well. He did a great job with hiring someone to pretty much handle, you know, a general manager from who's with San Antonio to kind of handle the day-to-day. I mean, there's been no doubt about the type of coach that Tom is. I mean, he's one of the hardest working coaches in NBA history as far as his preparation for game by game. But, you know, and then he has some very good young talent. Wiggins, Carl Anthony Towns, Levine, Gorgie Jang. They actually started to finish the season out pretty strong last year, you know, upsetting some teams. So I expect them to do well. Great coach, you know, great players. I think that, you know, they have a shot at, you know, getting into the playoffs just because no one prepares for game to game better than Tom. But at the same time, you know, they're in a tough conference out there in the West.
Do guys, Nazi, I mean, Tom was up all the time, almost at half court and calling plays. Do guys want that? Do they want that type of structure in general? Or is it, you know, hey, I'm in the NBA. Let me play my game.
Oh, it's a mixture. I mean, you can't sum up all guys. Some guys need structure. Some guys, it's all about what they experience coming through the high school and college ranks. I've always been a guy who likes structure. I like to know when I'm right, when I'm wrong. I like to know what we're doing. And there's a lot of other guys like that. There's guys who need structure who may not think they want structure. So So, you know, but I think this time off he's got probably has learned a lot because he was visiting a lot of teams. So he's probably got the opportunity to see, you know, what he needs to do and what he needs to change. So we all will be sitting back watching.
Nazi Muhammad here on 720 WGN. It's the fifth annual NMF fundraiser, Full Court Press Against Cancer, benefiting Different Shades of Pink and the Nazi Muhammad Foundation. This Friday, August 5th, you can get information at www.differentshadesofpink.org and www.nazirmuhammad.com.
Nazi, tell us about how the foundation came to be and what you guys are all about for people that don't know.
It came to be because I've always supported different organizations, but I've just kind of did it through just my personal self. And when I was coming back to Chicago, I decided I wanted to do something for my high school. And we had a fundraising that went well, and we did a lot of academic areas, and we raised some money for the, you know, athletic teams. But I wanted to keep going. And instead of just choosing one cause, I've always wanted to change it up every year because there's so many different causes that touch me at different points in my life. So every year I kind of reexamine and I kind of try to find a cause that is touching me that year. One year we did after school programs because it was an integral part of my life coming up. Another year we did diabetes, and last year we did All In for Autism. We donated to Turning Point Autism Foundation and Easter Seals. And this year I have four people, you know, in my life who were all diagnosed with cancer around the same time. So it told me, the message was I knew that I had to do something for cancer and support organizations that, you know, are on the front lines helping people battle cancer.
That's awesome, and it's great that you're doing it right here in Chicago, Nazi. Hey, before you get on out of here, let's just talk real quick about Derek and Joakim both leaving the Bulls and playing for the Knicks. Maybe I'm a romantic guy here, Nazi. I just kind of think that both those guys should have been in a Bulls uniform their entire career. You think the Bulls made a mistake in trading Derek?
That's something that we're all going to have to sit back and watch to see. I definitely would have loved to see Derek finish his career here. I mean, he's a friend of mine and, you know, ex-teammate. He's a great guy. He's a hard worker. And it's kind of sad to see, you know, so many people question his skill level because of injury. You know, can he get back to that level? At the same time, you know, Joakim was the heart and soul of the team since I've been here, and you know, his dedication to the community, dedication to the team has just been something I haven't seen on all the teams I've played with. But this is the NBA. I mean, trades happen. Sometimes change of scenery is good. I think Derek will do good in New York. I think Joakim is getting the chance to go home. I mean, he's always been a Knick at heart, even though he's like laid it on the line, you know, for the Bulls his whole career. So you know, it's sad to see those guys go, but, you know, they have, you know, a chance to do something new. And Garrett did a great job of putting together kind of what I think he doesn't call it the rebuild. He calls it retool.
Right.
The Bulls and them something, you know, that's going to be competitive with a hometown star. So it's going to be – I'm just going to sit back and wait and watch as a fan.
Sounds like you might think that it could be good for Derek, a change of scenery.
I mean, it definitely can be. I mean, it's hard playing at home. And I can't speak on him, but I can only imagine how hard it is to be a superstar playing at home. So I think the change of scenery, I think he'll have a little bit less pressure as far as, you know, just from the day-to-day things of being at home, family, friends, you know, having the weight of, you know, trying to be the face of the franchise in the city that you grew up in. So I think it'd be good for him in the long run.
Fifth annual NMF fundraiser, full court press against cancer, the Nazi Muhammad Foundation, differentshadesofpink.org, nazimuhammad.com. Are you going to be, Nazi, as we let you go here, and we appreciate the ample amount of time you just gave us, I got vision of you being a head coach someday, Nazi, prowling that sideline. Uh-huh. What do you think?
Your vision is wrong.
Really?
I have no desire to be a coach right now. I mean, I've heard other guys say that and wind up coaching. So you never know what the future may hold. But my eyes are set more on being the general manager of a team one day and,
okay,
you know, running my own team. Coaching is it's very, very time consuming. And with young kids, I want to be able to kind of watch my kids play and you know, play sports and things like that. So I don't see myself going into that right now.
How old are your kids?
13, 10, and 7.
Oh, boy.
My girls are 13 and 7, and my boy is 10.
Anybody got WNBA/NBA talent? What we got?
So my oldest, she plays volleyball, and she, you know, she's pretty good, and she loves it. My youngest, you know, she's only 7, so she plays everything. She's trying to, from soccer and basketball, but she's our best athlete. She's just an athletic kid. And my son, he loves soccer and basketball, and he's pretty good at both.
All right. Nazi, they're telling me I have to let you go, so I love talking to you. Sorry.
Right. Sorry. Good talking to you, too.
Hey, good luck. Good luck with casino night. Hope it goes great.
All right, thanks. And you guys are definitely invited. We can talk and, you know, take care of everything.
Great.
Thanks, Nazi.
Appreciate it. That is Nazi Muhammad, the former Chicago Bull, Chicago guy, different shades of pink.org.
Man, you would have just talked to him for the rest of the show.
Nazi,
you do know we have breaks and...
Yeah, Nazi...
news on this radio station?
Well, listen, Nazi... okay, I'll talk about coming back.
Yeah, we
back.
Have to take a break.
Okay, I'll talk about coming back.
We
bye.
Sometimes have to do that.
Bye. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Thanks to Nazi Muhammad. So here, I'll just tell one real quick story where I sort of just have, or why I have so much respect for that guy.
Yeah.
So not last season, but the year before, end of the year, reporters are going up to Taj Gibson, and they're asking him, it was the end of the season, they had lost. They're asking him about Tom Thibodeau and his future. And Nazi just stepped in and was like, hey, you know, he just lost. We just lost. He doesn't need to be answering questions about the coach. And so he was, you know, Nazi had like the far corner locker and Taj was next to him. So he was protecting his guy. Like Taj would just, Taj will never say no. He's just going to talk to anyone. So here was a guy that like, he didn't yell at the media. He just sort of protected his guy. And then like, Taj kind of walked out of there, and then Nazi just sat there and talked. Guys, hey, listen, you know, I know you guys have a job to do, but here, you know, it's unfair, and so it was just he was in complete rapport. I thought with the media that was in there, and it's rare that you see a guy like that. I mean, really rare. It's always like the media is just pure evil, right? And so
there's a lot of that.
I mean,
and then there's some guys that get it, and sometimes there's a veteran like Nazi who gets it, and can be reasonable and fair about everything, and everyone can see eye to eye.
And so, you know, if you saw him in the hallway or whatever and just wanted to ask him a question about what's going on, he'd give you, you know, a fair and balanced answer. I just appreciated that again. Differentshadesofpink.org. And by the way, the event, which is next Friday, VIP tickets available, all that stuff, hors d'oeuvres, dessert, hosted bar, DJ, silent auction, casino gaming, prizes, raising money for cancer. I'm sure that everyone's been touched by that. I know you have. I know I have. So, you know, good times. It's at Galleria Marchetti, 825 West Erie. So, you can have it. Cubs just lost to the Mariners, 4-1. We'll do baseball to start the 4 o'clock hour, 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Adam Hoge. Bears training camp is here. Cubs lose to the Mariners at Wrigley, 4-1.
Wah, wah.
All right. Wah, wah is correct. It was 1-0.
Aroldis, what happened?
It was 1-0. We'll get to him in a second. It was 1-0 in the top of the eighth. Jake Arrieta on the mound, and he ends up walking the first batter, walking the second batter, and then Joe Maddon goes out and gets him and brings in Hector Rondon, who's now the eighth inning pitcher, okay? First batter, sacrifice, back to Arrieta. Runners move up to second and third. And then you get a ground out to third, third to home, and the Cubs get the runner at the plate. So it's first and third, two outs. And Joe Maddon goes to Aroldis Chapman, who is not used to pitching in the eighth inning.
All right, that's not an excuse. Doesn't matter when you're pitching.
It matters. He's used to coming in the ninth.
The game's still on the line. Why does the inning matter? The game is, you have to get outs or you're going to lose. That's the same thing as a save.
Northside, Southside Report, and this argument sponsored by Vienna Beef as we start off the 4 o'clock hour with some baseball here on the Cubs losing to the Mariners.
High leverage situation is a high leverage situation. It should not matter what inning it is.
Okay, but listen, when you're used to starting the ninth with nobody on and you have to get three outs, there's a huge difference between coming in the bottom of the eighth, in trouble like he was, and then you go, you sit down, you come back out, you warm up again, and then you have to get three more outs. You will acknowledge that that's a change?
Okay, if you want to criticize the fact that Chapman came in the game, I think the argument isn't what inning it was. It's what was wrong with what Rondon was doing.
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
What's debatable here. I mean, the guy got two outs. He didn't give up a hit. He didn't give up a run. He didn't walk anybody. So why did he come out of the game? Well, I mean, am I missing something? We were here on the air, so I mean, it's not like I was watching every single second.
I don't think you're missing anything, and that's my point.
If he's your eighth inning guy, and he's pitching fine, then let him finish the eighth inning. Now, if he's your eighth inning guy and he's struggling, then I have no problem you going to Chapman, because I don't think that should matter what inning it is for him.
Right.
But let the guy do his job.
Right, and that's the thing. I get it. You went out and got Aroldis Chapman, and Cub fans went crazy, which I want to talk about in a second here.
Yeah.
But you.
Me too.
Okay, so you took Hector Rondon, who was one of the best closers in baseball, and you made him the eighth inning guy. Okay, I get it. You got an elite guy, and Hector Rondon was on board with that, and he wants to win a World Series, and his attitude's been phenomenal. But now, twice this week, in the eighth, with two outs, you've gone to Chapman. So you're not really even giving him the eighth. You're giving him the eighth, but if you're in trouble, we need one more out, I'm going to go to Chapman, which I could see in the playoffs or whatever. But like, look, man, when somebody's throwing 101, 102, 103 miles an hour, that is a lot of strain on someone's arm, okay? So if you're going to – now you're going to ask him to pitch to an extra batter, which doesn't necessarily seem like a big deal, but I think it is a big deal. And you're going to use this – you're going to want to run this guy out there all the time. I mean, that's his value, right? In the playoffs, he should be pitching – basically every night, and every time you have a lead, he's going to be coming in. So if you start adding on a whole nother out and a whole nother warm-up, that's going to pile up at some point. I don't like it.
Yeah, I
really don't.
This was just weird. I mean, I'm sure Joe Maddon, if he hasn't talked already, will give some kind of valid excuse on matchups or something like that. But to me, it's why did you even put Rondon in the game then if you wanted Chapman in there that badly? Because Rondon did nothing but come in and do his job. He got two outs.
Right. And I mean, well, we're not going to have him get six outs. And it's very hard to second-guess Joe Maddon. I love Joe Maddon. I trust Joe Maddon almost as much as I trust Theo in going out and getting Aroldis. But he's a little bullpen overusey. He just is. I mean, that's the one thing I would say about him.
He likes his analytics and his matchups and his numbers, and
he throws Travis.
It works for the most part.
I mean, he throws Travis Wood like seemingly every night. He burned Pedro Strop a lot earlier in the year. Then he backed off him. You got to be careful, and whatever.
Can we talk about the other part of this though?
Yeah. So okay, the Cubs trade for Aroldis Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first reaction?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
Right. I didn't.
And look, when I say that, I totally get the baseball side of it. But let's take the domestic violence out of it. Okay. Just for a second. Just for a second from a baseball standpoint.
Sure.
Okay. You gave up a lot for him.
Well, you gave up Gleyber Torres. The rest of it is kind of...
You don't think McKinney's going to be anything? He's probably going to be a guy.
He's just a guy.
He's just a guy, probably.
And
no one knows that Torres is going to be good either. Like I said last week on the show, these young guys bust out all the time. Just look at any Minnesota Twins prospect in the last 2 years.
Right. And Torres, I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. But he's 19 years old. He plays shortstop. He hits. He runs. Most likely that guy's going to make it and could be really good. But you're going to have
we'll
to.
We'll see.
And it's also the other side of it is whether he turns out or doesn't turn out, you just traded one of your chips. So now okay. you have one less chip to move in the future when you actually really need something. I mean, they didn't necessarily need a closer. I mean, Rondon was doing a good job, a very good job.
Right. But there's some valid points out there, though. For instance, if Chapman's on the Cubs last year, do you win a World Series? Nothing changes in the Mets series.
No.
Because you still got to hit.
Yeah, no, you lose all day. You still get swept. Really.
And that could still be the case this year if you don't hit. So, and it's a two-month rental. So you gave up a lot for a two-month rental, and I haven't even gotten to the part where he shot off his gun 8 times.
Right.
Which is that's scary, man. I mean, that's like, God forbid something worse had happened, but it's sort of like there's some O.J. Simpson in there. You watched the O.J. documentary?
Yeah, I did.
And all the warning signs when they go back and they look at it?
I mean, that's a huge leap.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, O.J.'s one of the worst people of all time.
But we don't know these guys.
We don't. I mean,
look, who knows what has happened with Aroldis Chapman since. Maybe he's miraculously come to his senses, going to be a great guy the rest of his life. Okay?
Well, and if you don't know,
my point is,
yeah,
you take a chance on a guy like this, and when you hear what happened last year, that, you know, he served his suspension and that's fine and all, and I'm a guy I believe in second chances too.
Also,
but I'm looking at this like a general manager, like an organization, right? You're taking a chance on this guy, and when you hear what happened back then, that could have been way worse, and it can be way worse in the future if something else happens. That is a huge risk to take when you're the Chicago Cubs and you've been preaching this, you know, Cubs way, and
well, and you've got
to have a stand-up organization. When I weigh the whole thing together, don't know if it's worth it. As good as he is, and I'm not debating his baseball talent, he's a phenomenal pitcher. Just a lot, and then now he's out there, and it's weird, man, isn't it? It's uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable watching him.
It is. Let's talk about the fans' reaction to Aroldis being a Cub coming up next year. Sunday on WGN TV, the White Sox wrap up their season. I mean, wrap up their division series against the Twins. In Minnesota.
Yeah. Okay.
Watch White Sox Twins Sunday at 1 on WGN TV. Your reaction, the fan reaction to Aroldis. We'll talk about that next. 720 WGN. He's Adam Hoge. I'm Mark Carmen. With you till 7 o'clock tonight. Okay, so Aroldis Chapman makes his debut at Wrigley Field. I'm sitting at home watching it. And the fans are on their feet. They're going crazy. They're basically like full giddy looking at the radar gun 101, 102, 103. Like he's, you know, just an instant jump in. Like this guy is just one of us and he's been here and we love him. And the media, you know, had so many articles out there by different folks just saying, this is wrong. He gets on the mound, and he's blowing guys, you know, strike one, strike two, strike three.
Well, White Sox.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Okay, that's a good point, but I mean,
well, okay, can I laugh about something real quick?
Sure.
There's two outs in the game the other night.
Yeah.
Ninth inning.
When it's 8-1.
I forget who batted first and second in the inning.
Oh, Avi? Well,
Avi comes up to bat with two outs.
Right, and ball's seven feet outside.
I'm like, oh, God, this is not going to go well.
Well,
no chance.
And it didn't. But so listen, 312-981-7200. I just think the Cub fans showed themselves to be like every other fan in baseball.
Sports.
That's right. In all sports. Nothing that you, I think it's just very clear, as clear as day. Nothing you do off the field matters as long as you can help my team that I like win on the field, period. And that's fine, by the way. I'm not saying right or wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just saying as a point of fact, this guy was in a garage firing 8 shots into the air, and his girlfriend was hiding in the bushes after he pushed her, shoved her, whatever it was. He comes to Wrigley. None of that matters. He comes to Wrigley Field. He's striking guys out. You're beating the White Sox. You're winning games. You're dreaming World Series. You're on your feet. You're going nuts. And that would happen. The same thing would happen in St. Louis, New York, Boston. Pick any team around baseball.
Southside Chicago.
Southside Chicago. It would be exactly the same. And
you at either of those games at Wrigley?
I did not
I'm
go
I'm just
to,
curious. Okay. And I wasn't either, but I was watching on TV. Maybe there are some people who were there that can call in 312-981-7200. My sense was that, how many, 42,000 people there? You know?
Yeah.
My sense is not all of them were cheering like crazy. And just, you don't think anyone was in there, like, kind of uncomfortable? I don't know if I should be cheering right now. This is kind of awkward. I hope the Cubs win, but.
Well, at least from what I could tell, they're going from shot to shot to shot to shot of just people that are just in amazement at what's going on. And I got to be honest, I mean, when he comes out of the pen and I'm looking, I'm like, oh my God, that guy is wearing the Cub jersey now. Which is just, I mean, it most definitely impacts their ability to win the World Series. And I am like flat right down the middle on it. The Cubs were looking to add on in the pen. They were looking to add on in their starting rotation. This was the most economic move. Like, the starting pitching is costing a ton. We can get Aroldis, who's a game changer, who's going to pitch all the time in the playoffs, for basically one premier prospect. Granted, it's your top prospect. Would I do it? I don't know. I mean, they make the comment like, well, the phone conversation that we had with Aroldis was huge, with Tom Ricketts and Theo and Jed, and we were all on the phone with Aroldis, who apparently was like there's a language barrier, but...
Yeah, but he didn't remember it.
I don't think that conversation didn't seem super important to Aroldis. And like, come on, man, the conversation, what is he going to say?
Like,
the conversation doesn't matter. The conversation is completely irrelevant. And don't sit there, don't come out like high horsey, Theo. Well, this conversation was super important. No, it wasn't. What was super important is that he could throw 103 miles an hour and he's a game changer. Anybody can pass that conversation. See Ray McDonald and a million other guys. I mean, you asked me.
The Bears tried that strategy with Ray McDonald last year, too.
Yeah. I mean.
And And that was my point earlier about you just don't want this to come back and bite you, because if something else happens, you just look dumb. And that's what happened. Ray McDonald got arrested again.
But my thing is, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares? You took a shot on Ray McDonald. What, are Bears fans not going to be Bears fans? Are people not going to go to the game? I think, like, the media makes it out like it's this big deal if it fails. It doesn't matter. Like, fans,
if he does something stupid here and...
Yeah?
Can't even play for you in the playoffs, and you just traded all his prospects away, you're going to say that it doesn't matter?
From a baseball standpoint, it matters. Yes, I agree with you there. But from a are people going to go to Wrigley Field in the future standpoint, it does not matter.
Oh, I don't think anyone's saying that.
Okay.
I don't think there's going to be an attendance crisis over this.
Well, I mean, but people worry about, like, perception and all that, right? 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. It's uncomfortable watching it, but I want him to pitch well, and he didn't today, but I'd like to see him succeed.
Well, let's hear what some listeners have to say about this. John, you're on 720 WGM.
White Sox and the Twins tonight. Cubs fall to the Mariners at Wrigley 4-1. Try to take 2 out of 3 in the series tomorrow. Jake Arrieta had a 1-run lead in the 8th, walked a couple guys, and then Aroldis Chapman eventually allowed them to score. So Arrieta takes the loss at Wrigley. We'll get back to the Cubs in a second, but Dr. Neil Gadadra is on the line, and he always makes you feel a whole lot better about injuries and Bears players being decent players. I know, Adam, you're nervous about one Pernell McPhee.
don't know if I'm nervous. I think when a guy has an arthroscopic knee surgery in January, February, and he's not ready to go for training camp almost 6 months later, that brings up some questions, right? Which is why we have Dr. Neil here to tell us what could be possibly going on. What's going on, Doc?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good to have you on the show again. We always appreciate your time. And so with your understanding of what could possibly be going on here, Pernell McPhee dealt with a knee injury throughout last season, something that he kind of had to monitor every week. And then when the season was over, they go in and they do a scope. At least that was what was reported. Not surprising, given the way he had to kind of monitor it throughout the season. And yet then he doesn't participate in any of the offseason program. Okay, maybe not that big of a deal. And then here we are, training camp, and he's still not ready to go, and they put him on the physically unable to perform list. So what are some of the possibilities here that Pernell McPhee might be dealing with?
Right, and typically, you know, we're so used to these guys getting scopes and bouncing back within a month or two, you know. So in instances like this, you get a little more nervous, right? And there's different possibilities of what it could be. And I'll tell you this, you know, typically with patients and athletes that take a long time to recover from a surgery like a scope, you start to wonder if there was something that was a little bit more aggressive or they had to do something more during the surgery than just a simple cleanup. Now, a couple of keys with him would be, hey, well, after surgery, was he on crutches for a while? Did they keep him off of it for a while? Because then that would give you a hint that he had something major done, such as a meniscus repair or some cartilage work. And even if they put new cartilage in or did something we call a microfracture, which you poke holes and try to create cartilage, you're looking at 6 to 9 months for recovery. But given that I think that he was walking, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he was pretty active and walking at least after surgery, then you start thinking about, wait a second, it started bothering him throughout the year. Then he had a scope, and now it's been 5 or 6 months or however long it's been, and he's still having trouble. Well, then you start to think he may have some early arthritis in that joint, which is not uncommon for football players.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he was kind of shielded from us during the offseason. So, you know, it's not like I can say if he was on crutches or not. I really don't know. Actually, I saw him yesterday. It was like the first time I'd seen him since the end of last season, because even during the OTAs and minicamp portion, they kept him inside the building. But let's go with the theory that it could be arthritis, something chronic that he might have to maintain. What would be the benefit of right now just keeping him off it, not having him practice, and how long is this something that's going to linger?
All right, good question. You hit it on the nail when you said chronic. You know, the problem with this is it doesn't necessarily go away. What it is, it has peaks and valleys, right? So you want to keep it down. You don't want it to get activated. And I think what happens sometimes with surgery, when you do a scope and a patient already has some arthritis, some patients actually activates it. So it gets angry. You know, it's like waking up a sleeping bear. And so what ends up happening is it takes time to recover. You get a lot more swelling. You get a lot more pain. It slows down your recovery process, slows down the training process. Hence, why you can't sometimes get back for a training camp in the start of the season and why it takes a few months. So for him, this will be an ongoing issue. The question is why would they put him through training camp if they feel like he's still not fully healed or it's going to aggravate it? So he wouldn't be ready for the start of the season or midway through the season anyway. So I think my guess is what they're probably focusing on right now, doing good physical therapy, keeping swelling down, keeping him in shape as much as possible cardio-wise. And then you can, throughout the season, or even right now, you can start thinking about different types of injections. That's how you help athletes get through the football season, is you get them injections throughout. And there's all sorts of different types that, you know, these guys can get that can really help them throughout the season, in fact, for most of their career.
Dr. Neil Gadadra with us here on 720 WGN. I think the Bears season, you can't say it hinges on one player, but one real key player for him, Dr. Neil, is Kevin White, who missed all of last season, wide receiver, and he overworked himself to the point that he had to have a rod inserted into his leg. And I think we talked to you last year about this, and you said that he was going to be fine. What can Bears fans expect from Kevin White?
Well, fine long term.
Fine.
I mean, he wasn't saying that he was going to play last year. He was saying that long term you can recover from this and be okay.
So
exactly.
Do you see, will this back up on him where he'll have to constantly monitor it, Dr. Neil, or is this he should be good to go from here and there shouldn't be really any stories about his health that we'll be hearing coming out of camp and during the season?
Yeah, I honestly don't think that you'll hear anything about it. Obviously, it'll take time to get your muscle strength back and get back into playing shape, But he's not one I'm really concerned about, or I don't think we should be concerned about. And a cross example would be Paul George for the basketball team, you know, the U.S. basketball team. You know, you have a rod in his leg, and look, there's no downside to it now. He's doing great. And so I expect the same for Kevin. He's not the, in fact, it sounds crazy, but the Purnell situation with the arthritis is worse than the rod situation with Kevin. And it sounds counterintuitive, right? Because one was a bigger surgery, one was smaller.
Right.
But the issue is that the arthritis is chronic. It'll last the rest of his career. And it's very typical for a lot of NFL guys, especially ones that I see in clinic, you get x-rays, you see arthritis. The key is not, the question is not, hey, does he have arthritis or not? A lot of these guys do. The question is it painful and does it get activated? And for Kevin, you don't have to deal with those questions. So if anything, he may have a little tendonitis here and there that you may hear about just because of having had surgery. But that's not anything that'll keep him out of a game.
Well, that's good to hear. And so far, Kevin White, it's only been a few days of practice, but the speed looks like it's there. The explosiveness looks like it's there. And his quarterback, Jay Cutler, keeps talking him up like he's going to be a tremendous player. And we'll see once these games start here. Kyle Long the other day, Doc, suffered a calf strain. Fortunately, it seems like the news is good. I'm sure they did MRIs and came back mostly clean. He had a boot on his foot for 2 days, and then I saw him out there today on the practice field. The boot was gone, and he wasn't even limping that much. What do you take from what you hear right there on what has happened the last few days with his calf?
Yeah, and calf strains, they're almost like ankle sprains. You know, they're annoying. They linger a little bit. So depending on how bad it was, it keeps some people out for 3 or 4 weeks, or it can only keep you out for a couple of days. Given that he was in a boot for 2 days, it probably means that it was on the medium side and that they just wanted to make sure that they held him in position, allow the swelling to go down, help him feel better, and then get him the physical therapy and training. And I think the fact that he's already on the field tells us that he feels good enough and he did well enough those first 2 days with just good ice and treatment and rest that it shouldn't be a big issue. So I'm thinking maybe a week or two, he'll be, you know, ginger about it and have a little bit of difficulty, but it shouldn't affect his play too much. And it's not something that I expect will come back as long as he keeps strong and keeps it stretched and stays in shape throughout the season.
Sports orthopedic surgeon Dr. Neil Gadadra on right now. You can follow him on Twitter at SportsDrNeil and DrNeilMD.com. You can find him there as well. The Bears' first opponent this year, the Houston Texans, and J.J. Watt is on the pup list as well. Guy's never missed a regular season game in his entire career, but he's certainly dealt with a ton of injuries. He's a tough guy. Played last season with a herniated disc in his back and had surgery on it recently and is now out for the preseason, out for training camp. I don't know how much you know on the background of what JJ's dealing with here, but as you look at that, you kind of hear he's also had some torn muscles in his core that he was playing with and dealt with and had surgery on that as well. He's had a lot going on. What do you think his chances could be of recovering in time for that? It's a week one matchup against the Bears.
Well, depending on the exact date of surgery, you're looking at about 6 to 8 weeks, probably closer to eight. And even if he comes back at that 6 to 8 week mark, he's still going to be a little weak. Typically, herniated discs, we take out if it's causing severe pain or numbness or tingling or weakness down the legs. Now, watching him play last year, he didn't necessarily present with those symptoms, right? I mean, he was still J.J. Watt.
Right.
But it was bad enough and chronic enough that they did it in the offseason, which means to me, A, he was playing through pain. B, there might have been some issues there with weakness, you know, which could lead to core issues and leg issues and other issues that he's been dealing with. So the key now will be he's got 6 to 8 weeks to recover. All they're going to do is let him rest, do some more core training, physical therapy. Can he come back for that game? Well, if it's within 6 to 8 weeks, then yes, he can. Will he perform as typical? Probably not. It'll take a few more weeks after that for him to really get back into playing shape. You know, for a guy like him, it's explosion, right? It's being able to squat and push and use leverage. Well, that's what causes herniated disc in the first place. And the problem is once you've had surgery there, it's a vulnerable spot. There's no guarantee that it's not going to happen again in the same spot. You know, it's like once you poke a hole in the dam, it's easy to make another one.
Well,
and it's the same thing.
And it kind of sounds like this may have been something he aggravated in the offseason because the guy was posting tweets and Snapchats and all kinds of things of him working out in the offseason, and then all of a sudden he had surgery. So it seems like it was something that popped up here and kind of got aggravated when, you know, during the off time.
Right. Chances are he had it. He played with it. It was bearable. And then he did something in the offseason, whether it was a squat or whatever, some workout move where it just kind of spit out the disc even more. And that just did it. You know, it's like toothpaste coming out of coming out. You just squeeze it and boom, it shoots out. And that's what happened to the disc. And when it hits a nerve, it causes severe pain, which is probably why they did. And also timing-wise, they probably wanted to get him back for the first few games of the season, which is probably why you saw that timing as well.
Dr. Neal, I know that you're a doctor, but I'm thinking about taking on the Big Ten Network has their 10K and 5K next Saturday. And I'm not in running shape, although I do play tennis and whatnot, doctor. So I'm thinking about running a 10K next Saturday at 7 a.m. What type of training should I do this week, in your expert opinion? And what is my downside here of just running a 10K without preparation, 6 miles? Do you think my body will back up on me to the point that I won't be able to walk?
Well, you know, depends on how good a shape you're in, right? I mean, you may not be able to walk afterwards anyway. But I'll tell you this. If you can't get somebody to carry you throughout the whole 5K or 10K, and if you're going to run it, start slow. You know, you've got, a week now?
Yep.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got a week. What I would do is I would run a mile a day and increase every day by a mile. So do a mile and a half and then go 2.5, 3.5. If you go too aggressive too quickly, you'll get shin splints. You could get a stress fracture and cause severe pain. So one idea, take an Advil or ibuprofen before the run and immediately after the run, okay?
Uh-huh.
And stretch out like you wouldn't believe. Your IT band will get really tight, so do me a favor. Good job stretching out your hamstrings, your IT band. You'll make the run. You'll do fine, but just build up. Don't go out and run a 5K, 10K tomorrow. Start slow. And you'll see within a week, you'll get yourself in shape. So 1.5 miles, 2.5, 3.5, 4.5, 5.5, kind of go up that way for a week.
So, okay.
You'll do it nice and slow, and you'll be fine. And if somebody needs to carry you from the station, make sure somebody's there to walk you through.
So I'm going to get off the show tonight at 7. I'm going to go, and I'm going to run how far?
Go hit it.
1 mile? 1.5. How far?
Start with 1.5 to 2.
1.5 to 2.
There you go.
All right.
All right, Doc, I need a diagnosis too, because, you know, there's this big Bears media basketball game last night against the Bears staff, and you could bill me for this, I guess, but my ego's a little bruised, first of all, for losing, but I also do have this pain that's going on the top of my foot from my big toe, like, up towards my ankle. It's like on the top of my foot. I'm pressing on the bones, and that's not hurting if I press on the bones, but I have no idea what it could be. And it's only when I put weight on it.
Called getting old. No, it's depending on your shoes, it could be old or new shoes, but sometimes when you do jumping activities that you haven't done in a while, it likely is at the top of the foot, right where the crease is when you kind of bend your foot to jump. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly where it is.
Yeah. And repeated jumping exercises, just that's why I said when you guys are doing the 5K, 10K, go slow. Same here. So if you had played basketball or gotten yourself in basketball shape a little bit before, this wouldn't have happened. So it's nothing to worry about. Consider it a bone bruise. So just ice it, take Advil ibuprofen, and be careful next time you go out and play, especially with the big boys.
Yeah, exactly. Don't play 4 games of basketball when you hadn't played in like four years.
I didn't realize it was 4 games.
It was rough. All right. Thanks, Dr. Neal. You're the best. We appreciate your time as always, and always appreciate your insight as well.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And I feel better about my foot now. Not the ego. That's gonna linger for a while.
This is
tough.
I mean, I got a great plan. I'm coming out of here tonight. We're going to run 1.5 miles. Let's go. Come on. You want to do the 10K with me next week?
No. 0% that happens.
0.0%.
0% I run with you after the show. I'll hobble down Michigan Avenue.
Dan Long, you in?
I don't know. We might need to book a cardiologist on the show just to clear me.
So Dan Long's going to have a heart attack. Hogue's body's going to be completely broken down. Carmen, the oldest guy on the show, I'm going to probably have some issues, but I'm ready to go, baby. Let's go.
For the record, we booked him before I hurt my foot. We didn't just like, no, I didn't do that just so I could avoid going to the doctor.
No, you wanted your Pernell McPhee update. And I did. And we got it right there. All right, quick timeout, and we will move along back to the baseball, and I also have an update on Luna the dog. which I might be nominating myself for best dog sitter of all time.
Jesus.
720 WGN. 720 WGN. We're going to get back to the Cubs conversation, start the five.
Aren't you so happy it's bear season, Mark?
I love bear season just because of Hamp OB and Kaz.
I text Carm, hey, you want to come down to camp Saturday?
I had a tennis match this morning. I couldn't.
Nah, I'm good.
I said, how bad do you want me to come? Like, I don't care if you come at all. I'm like, well, that'll be.
Well, I wanted you to come, but I mean, I can handle doing the interviews and get him on the show.
Listen,
you don't need to come down just for that.
Well, last year I came down and did some interviews with you, and it was stressful getting back here in time. And
it really wasn't.
It was a little stressful. I remember being at the.
You guys were worried about it more than you needed to be, and we got back here in plenty of time.
Right, but then I was tired for the show, and I wanted to be full energy. See, you had to run out, get a Red Bull.
Yeah, hour one was a little slow.
See, I'm ready.
I don't think he came across on the air, but during the breaks, I was like, I'm dead.
Yeah, I mean, since...
Right. Oh, we're back? All right.
Yeah, so that's, you know...
I'm good now.
It's a big effort to go down to Bourbonnais. Bourbonnais.
It's not that big of an effort.
It's an hour and a half, hour and 15. How long is that drive?
It took me an hour, 7 minutes to get back.
Yeah, 107. That's an hour of seven where I can just be with Dan Long and intensely prepping the show. I think that's more important to our listeners than me being in Bourbonnais with you. So I made that call. Plus,
you could have come down last night, played some bags.
Well, if you had told me that was an option, then I would have considered it. But you didn't present it like that. Real fast, because I know that everybody's very interested in how I've done as a dog sitter this week. Last week, with Luna the dog, she was unwilling to go down the stairs. I had to carry her down the stairs. I reached out to the fine WGN listeners, who some texted in saying that I'm the worst person ever and that this dog is going to have a terrible experience and that I was just being completely unfair. Luna the dog is now sprinting down the stairs.
Yeah. Why wasn't she going down the stairs? She was afraid?
She was afraid of the stairs. So I listened to your advice out there, numerous texts and calls, and I did the old treat mechanism on the stair, and then eventually she I'm on the second floor of the condo, so she started running up the stairs to the third, I think just to try it out. Then she had to come back down, and then now just full sprinting down the stairs, no collar on. I just open up the door, and there she goes. Dog sitter of the year. And then the other side of it is she early in the week we had many accidents. I was very distraught to find different treats or different deposits throughout the condo.
Wait, how old is this dog?
6 months. It's a puppy.
Oh, and it still has problems?
It was having some issues. Now,
how do you call her? Do you go 773-202
Luna.
Does the dog respond to that?
I haven't used that doing it when I go home today. I just sit there and stare at her. I'm like, you're Luna the dog. That's what I do. Let's go, Luna the dog. Luna the dog. So Luna the dog there's no number one or number two around the house as of late. We're on a good eating schedule. She's sprinting down the stairs. I haven't quite gotten her to the back deck going down the back deck yet. She's afraid of that.
It's always tomorrow.
So before I return her to her actual parents on Monday, my brother, sister-in-law, and my niece, Grace, I'm going to have her go down those stairs. And I honestly think that I've taken the dog from being like borderline, neurotic, schizophrenic animal to just calming down. She's better on the walk. I'm giving her treats when she goes outside. I think I'm delivering back a more polished animal, and I'm very proud of myself.
You're going to get a dog, aren't you?
I'm tempted.
You were already tempted like a couple months ago.
Go into business as the new dog whisperer.
I could be the dog whisperer.
Get a greyhound. They're really mellow.
No, I'm not.
That sounds like too much maintenance for
too
calm.
Easy.
Too thin, the hound. Yeah. Don't like the look of the hound. I want my dog to be cute.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, Bob. Do you have a hound?
I did.
Well, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder,
there you go.
Bob.
Thank you.
And for me, the greyhound just needs to eat something.
You can have my dog.
Yeah, you're terrible with your animal. Every time I talk to you about your dog, I'm like, hate my dog.
I don't hate my dog. I love my dog.
Who hates a dog?
She's just a pain in the butt.
What's wrong with your animal? I can fix this.
Yeah, he's not. Mark?
I'm better than Steve Dale now. I'm going right at Steve
Dale.
Throne. Call Steve Dale. Let him know that Carmen's coming after him. I want my own you pet should, show.
Oh, if anyone even utters those words, he has some sort of internal spidey sense.
We lose!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The Beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
We are halfway home on The Beat, 507. Welcome in, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Adam Hoag. The Pittsburgh Pirates have traded their closer, Mark Melancon, to the Washington Nationals. They're not waving the white flag, though. The Pirates are still battling for the wild card. 9.5 back of the Cubs, now 9 back. The Cubs lose today at Wrigley, 4-1. The big play in the game was Aroldis Chapman coming in with 2 outs in the 8th and giving a 2-run double to the left field wall. And the Mariners came back from 1-0 down to win 4-1. Jake Arrieta taking the loss. And a lot of people second-guessing Joe Maddon on using Chapman in the 8th, which I'm not so much second-guessing. Like, listen, he brought him in to face a lefty who hits lefties 100 points less than he hits righties in Hector Rondon. All of that is true. But I also wonder about overusing a closer guy who's max effort to the max effort, throwing 102, 103, and the Cubs are now showing, or Maddon showing, a desire to use him in the 8th and in the 9th. I hope that does not back up on him.
Well, and, like, does today's game really matter?
Well,
you traded for this guy. You took a huge organizational risk to win a World Series in October. Like, big picture, you did not need to take Rondon out of the game today.
No, and you didn't. And
but he would have. Now Chapman would have pitched the 9th anyway.
Right, of course. If the Cards win tonight, and the Cards have been playing great baseball, they'll be 5.5 games back, which would be the smallest lead that the Cubs have had. You got to go all the way back to May the 28th.
Yeah.
So it's getting a little interesting. St. Louis has been playing great baseball, and they're winning on the road. They're winning at New York. They're winning at Miami, both potential playoff teams. So, listen, you long season, a lot can happen. We're about to get into August, the trade deadline coming up on Monday here. But, you know, 5.5, that ain't 14 games up. That ain't 10 games up.
No, and it used to be double digits.
Right.
So they've cut that pretty much in half.
And basically, since the Cubs started out ridiculously 25-6, they played 500 baseball. So now you're talking about playing 500 baseball since the beginning of May, roughly, to we're in August now. That's May, June, July. You played 500 ball for 3 months.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
now, I would argue that there's a different... Okay, this isn't hockey where you the level play goes up, extremely once you get to the playoffs. It's like a whole different game, but there is a different intensity level in October, even late September, and I think this is a team that probably came down from the high of going 25-6, and it's sort of just having fun, enjoying the summer right now, and can go to that next. Hit that next gear once they get into September. So I'm not too concerned, but I have to admit, Carm, I was not aware that they had played 500 baseball for 3 months. And that's notable, at the very least.
And tomorrow, Brian Matzett's getting called up from AAA Iowa. Justin Grimm has been sent down. So, and tomorrow's start was supposed to be Kyle Hendricks. Now, I think the Cubs are just going to kind of space out their starters with a little six-man rotation. Maybe Matzes will be up and stay, or maybe he'll just come up and pitch for one day and go back down. Don't know exactly. But they're trying to protect their starting staff. Okay, and they did this before the All-Star break with sending Adam Warren down to AAA and going into a six-man rotation. Joe Maddon is trying to get ahead of the field here with not having his starters run down going into the playoffs. So, I mean, and the main guy that you think everyone's worried about is Jake Arrieta, right? Who has now, he has now lost 8 of his last 11 decisions, just for the record. He pitched well today, very well, and didn't allow a run when he was in the game. Took the loss because two runners scored that he left out there who he walked in the 8th. And he looked good. He was throwing first pitch strikes all day today, and his pitch count was very low for getting into the eighth, under 100 pitches at 92. So there's positive there. But, you know, you're also it's very clear the Cubs are trying to they're trying to manage the health of Arrieta. They're trying to manage the health of Lester. John Lackey's not a young guy either, okay? And Kyle Hendricks has been phenomenal. But can he really be...
Not against the White Sox.
He pitched fine in that game. He gave up two runs. Took him out in five, after 5 2/3. There's just some interesting stuff going on right now. Yesterday, you had to send out Tommy La Stella because you wanted to bring Chris Coughlin back because you might be trading him because Jorge Soler is coming back. They're going to have to make some tough decisions here. So a guy like Tommy La Stella, who absolutely does not belong in the minors, is now in the minors because he has options. Same thing with Justin Grimm, who was the seventh inning guy behind Strope earlier in the year, now being sent out as they, you know, deepen the bullpen. It's a good problem to have. They got a ton of talent. But it's just there's a little bit of unsettlement going on right now. That's all.
You're worried.
Of course.
You're worried.
And Josh Reddick could.
What are you worried about? Like
Arrieta's health.
Okay, that's significant. Are you worried the Cubs aren't going to make the playoffs?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Are you worried they're not going to win the division?
2%.
Okay, that's pretty low.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned.
But the
Cardinals are playing great baseball, man.
See, I'm worried the White Sox aren't going to win the division.
Well, that's a good worry. That's not even a worry. Is that really a worry? St. Louis, just if people aren't paying attention to the Cardinals, which is always a good thing to do, don't.
But they'll cool off.
Well, that's what they say. St. Louis out of the break. They lost 2 of 3 to the Marlins. Then they swept the Padres in a 4-game set.
Okay, it's the Padres.
Lost 2 of 3 to the Dodgers. Took 2 of 3 from the Mets, have won the first two versus Florida, going for game 3 of the 4-game set tonight. So they've won 4 of 5, and before that they won 5 of 7. It's pretty good. They were...
Not a huge sample.
Coming out of the break, they were 40... They after one game after the break, they were 3 over at 46 and 43. They're now 9 over, 56 and 47. So that's a pretty good move in a very short period of time.
I also don't think the Cubs are going to play 500 baseball the rest of the year.
I'm expecting them to get hot, too.
It was this time ago last year that they got swept by the Giants, right? Or did they sweep the
Giants? They swept the Giants.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean.
In the middle of August,
A team that couldn't get above 7 games above 500, right?
That's right, and then they took off.
They kept getting to 7, and then they lose a couple, and then they were like hanging around 7 over,
but a lot
the whole year, and then all of a sudden they sweep the Giants, and bam,
right,
NLCS.
But a lot changed at that point. That's when they were benching Starlin. That's when Dexter Fowler finally started to play well.
Yeah, but this team's better.
They are. And one guy who perhaps he had a home run yesterday, and he had a double today, and maybe he'll take off. He's certainly due, Jason Hayward. Who I was never a huge fan of. I said that when they signed him. I'll say it again today. He's not a true power guy. I get it. He's a good defender. And okay, great. If I see him ground out one more time to second base,
Hayward?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you what I've probably
$22 million.
I've probably said this 22 million times this week to Cubs fans. All right.
Oh, it's his first year with the team.
No. You don't get to have every single draft pick, every single free agent just totally pan out. Here's a reality check, Cubs fans. Most free agents aren't good. Most free agents turn out to be busts. That's what happens. You have one guy who's not working out. One guy. Oh, my God. Let's all pile on Jason Hayward.
I wasn't piling on.
Who's still playing great defense, by the way.
Wait, hold on a second.
And this isn't just you. This is everyone.
Cubs
fans are killing this guy right now.
I don't think they're killing him at all.
Only because they have nothing else to complain about, really.
This is
unheard of what Theo's doing with these prospects. Every single guy comes up is good. Every single guy they sign is good. Jason Hayward. Oh, man, he's just grounding in the right field every time. Oh, man, what a bust. I'm so sick of this guy. They need to take him out of the lineup.
Listen, I'm pro building.
You guys are so spoiled. It's unbelievable.
I think I say this on every show that we do, that I would build the Theo statue today.
I know.
I would have built it yesterday.
Just give Jason Hayward a break.
My only point is that, last year when they took off, a lot of guys started playing better. Starlin had an unbelievable end-of-the-year finish. Addison Russell stepped in at short and was playing phenomenal defense, which they didn't have earlier in the year. The only guy right now who really has the ability to take off is Jason Hayward. I mean, Fowler's been great all season long. Bryant's playing at an MVP level. Mm-hmm. Anthony Rizzo is playing at an MVP level. Arrieta could get back to what he was doing earlier in the season. There's a guy that's true. And Aroldis Chapman is a whole new shiny toy in the bullpen that does change. By the way, Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, or it was Chicago Tribune, used to be the Chicago Tribune, MLB.com, will be with us at 5:35 to expand and just agree with all the brilliance that I'm putting out there on baseball right now. Hayward's really the one guy that you could have a huge bump if he goes back to just doing what's on the back of his baseball card.
Right. I mean, there's been talk about adding a bat, and the reality is what you guys need is just him to play well.
That would help.
I mean, if Jason Hayward went back to being Jason Hayward, that's a huge trade deadline acquisition.
Sure, sure. 312-981-7200, Cub fans, where's the nerves level? And we talked about Aroldis Chapman earlier in the show. I kind of want to revisit that for a second here before we get to Phil and how Cub fans are just giddy. Jump it up and down for Aroldis in the 101-mile-an-hour fastball. This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot, check out the best food from the south, from south of the border right here in the Windy City. Chicago's Best Mexican. Love it. Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. This is The Beat, 720 WGN.
Hayward deep right. Gone! Oh, that feels good. It's a two-run homer for Hayward, and it's 5-0 Cubs.
That was yesterday. Cubs pounded the Mariners 12-1.
But the game of baseball will come back and get you. The Mariners come back today, and the Cubs only score one after scoring 12-4-1.
Seattle wins. Jason Hayward with that home run yesterday to make it 5-0. As you just heard, very... without looking, Adam Hogue.
Yes.
How many homers do you think Jason Hayward has after that home run?
Five.
Jason Hayward, after that home run. By the did I ever mention the Cubs are paying Jason Hayward 22?
Get
minutes?
Off him.
Five home runs. That's correct.
Yeah. I knew he had four.
All right, so there you go. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, quick story. Going back to last weekend when I was at Miller Park, Brewers Cubs, we were out in the right field corner, standing room only, where Hayward was.
Yeah.
I mean, Cubs fans were just killing the guy.
Well, they're bored. They're in the right field corner.
I mean, just killing them.
Well, they're drinking all the Biller products. How bad were they really killing him? Because he has not come. If the Cubs were losing and weren't in first place all season long, that guy would be getting booed at Wrigley all day. They booed Moise Salou in his first year with the Cubs. They've booed a lot of guys who have come over here, Mel Rojas, and struggled in his first year.
Don't boo your own team, by the way. That doesn't help anything.
They're not trying to help. They're trying to ridicule.
And Sox fans do that too, by the way. That's not me attacking Cubs fans. Sox fans do that all the time.
Well,
I was there for James Shields' first start. He wasn't even out of the first inning before Sox fans were booing him in his debut with his new team. And I'm going, how does that help the guy at all?
Listen, Blackhawk fans will boo the Blackhawks when they're down 3-0 after two periods or something along those
lines. In November.
Right.
They're coming off their third Stanley Cup.
You just won three cups. You're booing because you spent the money that night and you're not getting to see the Blackhawks win, so you're going to boo. I mean, fans we're crazy. We are.
Yeah.
But they're not. Hayward has gotten a free pass for the most part. So, I mean, sure, on talk radio or whatever. And I guess when your experience up at Miller Park in the right field corner, maybe you heard. But I have not heard him come to the plate once.
Look, I'm like the only Sox fan on the Bears beat. All I've heard nonstop for 3 days is how much Jason Hayward sucks.
Did you see last night in the ninth inning? Hold on a second. I got to pull it up. Who was pitching? But it was 12-1. They brought in a position player. Jason Hayward's at the plate. He rolled out to second. I mean, come on, man. No, he can't. He hit a homer yesterday, too, and he hit another shot to left center that would have gone out if the wind was not blowing in. But they brought in the position player, and he rolled out to second. Which is, I mean, come on. I don't. If the season wasn't going the way it was going, they'd be killing him. And he's basically getting a pass in my mind. 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear from Cub fans who were there in Aroldis Chapman's debut against the White Sox earlier this week, because, you know, we talked about it briefly earlier. Everyone on their feet. Everyone basically smiling and pinching each other. Can you believe this? This is so fun.
So I was there on Tuesday night at the Cell.
Right.
And I really wanted to see him that night because that would have been a different reaction, right?
Oh, for sure.
Because it was close to 50-50. There were still more Sox fans than Cubs fans there, though. And I mean, there would have been a lot of booing.
Sure. Absolutely. And it's not like he's just not high profile enough where I don't think, you know, he goes to St. Louis or wherever, which he's, by the way, he hasn't given up a run to the Cardinals in forever. He hasn't given up a run to the Pirates in forever. And whenever he was pitching against the Cubs as a Red, I'd be like, okay, game's over. No chance. This guy's ridiculous.
I think he's high enough profile to those fan bases, though.
Maybe so.
Those fan bases have seen him.
Maybe so.
He kind of got off the hook by moving the American League this year after what happened. He'll get his fair share of heckling in those towns. Absolutely, he will.
What is that baseball that he throws with in the bullpen? It's like a heavy black ball that he's warming up with. I mean, I don't know what he. I mean, he's doing something different than everybody else to throw 100 and whatever it is, 103, 102.
What was the tweet that
he's got this different baseball that he's warming up with, the heavy ball? Why doesn't everybody go with the heavy ball? It's a new follow Aroldis' lead to the heavy ball. That's my goal this week, to find out exactly what that ball is. I'm going to go talk. I'll do it tomorrow morning.
Did you see the @WrightSox tweet the other night when Aroldis was pitching?
I missed that one.
It's going to take me 7 days to find it because he tweets every 5 seconds. I'll try to find it. I don't even know if I can read it on the air. It was cold. Oh, is when he came in and only needed six pitches to get out of the inning.
Right.
@WrightSox tweeted, this time Aroldis only needed 6 bullets to get his point across.
Oh, boy. There it is. Okay, quick timeout. We'll talk to Phil Rogers, MLB.com, as we check in on the deadline, which is Monday. And Phil, of course, does a great job covering both sides of town. That's next, 720 WGN. WGN, 535 with you till 7. Amy Guth will be in at 7 o'clock. I listened to Amy earlier today. She was on with Anna Belleval. Amy described herself. That sounds like Kathy and Judy laughing in the background there. Amy Guth described herself as a scrawny, tall, big woman. And she says that those type of women don't nap. She was talking about like being on a flight and fighting for the armrest. So when Amy comes in for crosstalk at 6:50, we're gonna.
I feel like I've talked to Amy about that before.
Scrawny, tall.
Like I don't fit on airplanes either, and I'm scrawny and tall.
Yeah, but like there's a lot of adjectives that Amy could use to describe herself that are a lot more flattering than scrawny and tall. I think we can say nicer things about ourselves.
Right, what but I'm talking about. But I get where she was coming from with the airplane thing. Like, I don't fit in airplane seats. My head's too far above the headrest to be able to sleep. And my knees are always touching the seat.
You need to get more creative. If you can't sleep on an airplane, I can't help you.
I can't.
I go right to bed. So does Phil Rogers.
Can't do it.
MLB.com, one of baseball's preeminent national writers, joining us on 720 WGN. Phil, thank you for taking time. Let me ask you, let's start here. How much better is Aroldis Chapman than Mark Melancon? How much better of a pitcher would you say he is?
Before I dive into that thing,
yeah.
One thing about Amy Guth, I know what she's not telling you, the answer to this.
What's that?
She is like me, a Texan. And Texans, we're always thinking. That's why she doesn't sleep on the flight. We're just, as a Texan, you just can't turn your brain off because, you know, you have too much to offer. So that's the Amy Guth what's behind the headline story there. And Chapman to Melanson is, he's better, but he's not that much better. Yeah. I mean, if it's a situation, runner on third, one out, you got to get a strikeout, he's a lot better. But if it's the ninth inning is starting with no runners on a base, which is the normal save situation, then Melanson is pretty darn good. They couldn't be more dissimilar. But, you know, I think from the same starting point, ninth inning, one run lead, nobody on base, Melanson is almost as good as Chapman.
I mean, the Pirates gave up, Phil, Felipe Rivero and Taylor Hearn. Now, people are saying that they got good value, or rather the Nats gave up Felipe Rivero and Taylor Hearn for Melanson. In your expert opinion, is that a lot less than what the Cubs gave up in getting Chapman?
Yeah, it's significantly less. You know, I think, they're both good pitchers. One, you plug right into your bullpen now and you figure out what to do with him in Rivera. The other comes up down the road. But I don't think the Cubs offer, once you go past Gleyber Torres, I think it's not as rich as it might seem. But that's a big if. I mean, Gleyber Torres is a big deal prospect, and there's, you know, neither of the guys going for Melanson fit that category. I think the guys at the bottom of the Cubs deal in McKinney and Crawford are probably not big bargaining chips. I know they're not big bargaining chips, and they're probably guys that aren't going to be impact big leaguers.
So, Phil, do you think the Cubs are done right now?
No, I think there's no way they're done. I think they still might add a left-handed hitting outfielder. Josh Reddick is the guy that seems to fit the mold. And, you know, I don't rule them out on a bullpen piece, and maybe I'm crazy, but I don't rule them out on Andrew Miller until the deadline time comes around. They wanted Miller more than Chapman, and getting Chapman assures them of having one guy, but it doesn't mean they no longer want Miller.
Phil Rogers, MLB.com, with us here, 720 WGN. One more on the Cubs, and then we'll get to the White Sox here. What about, because I'm reading some people saying Josh Reddick's not going to happen. If it doesn't happen, and the Mets supposedly are interested in Jay Bruce, and that's getting closer, Jay Bruce, I think, would look pretty good on the north side, Phil. Left-handed bat with some pop. He's having a great year. No?
Yeah, yes. I think... the price tag for him is probably higher. That's what I'm operating under, that assumption that Reddick would be easier to get than Bruce. Okay. Bruce fits for the same reasons. Reddick does have those Red Sox ties, and we know those matter. So I think that also plays into the favor of a deal with Reddick. We know, Theo has dealt with Billy Beane before, but. You know, I don't. The other thing that's kind of clouds that to me a little bit is Javier Baez versus right-handers. He has started to hit right-handers. I've seen the numbers since the All-Star break. I know in the Cubs series at the first three games of the Cubs series, he had two homers, a double, and a single, all off right-handed pitchers. So, if Baez is hitting left-handers and right-handers, it does lessen your need for a left-handed bat. But, you know, it's a Chris Coughlin upgrade is kind of what you would be getting in a left-handed hitting outfielder. You would be not necessarily getting rid of him, but the big at-bats in the postseason would be going to whoever you got instead of Chris Coughlin.
He's Phil Rogers, MLB.com. Hey, Phil, can we go back to what you said about Andrew Miller and still not ruling that out until the deadline actually passes? I agree that the Cubs probably wanted him more. I guess my question is, if they still felt like they could get him, then why make the Chapman deal when they did? if there was still time. And then also, I mean, don't you think Miller's value just goes up the closer we get to the deadline?
Probably. I think the whole thing, Miller and Chapman together, you know, it was going to be very expensive to get any of those guys. But the Cubs have a lot of parts. I mean, let's say the Yankees like Jorge Soler. I don't know they do, but let's say they do. You can build a deal around Jorge Soler and other guys in their system. And the one thing I know their front office doesn't want to do is go out at midseason every year and find your closer. And so Miller, you know, getting Miller now totally fits what they're doing because it pushes up the roster to give you an even better chance to win every playoff series you play this year. And this is the most important postseason they will have. Whether they win or lose this year, the first big crack with this team, and I know they got to the championship series last year, but that was sort of manna from heaven. It wasn't really expected. But the heat's going to be on in this October like it wasn't last October. And if they don't win, then that's going to ratchet up the heat even more in future Octobers. So this is really the biggest all-in October. So that's why I think they could still pursue and try to land Miller. And, you know, I think it would be expensive part to get, but maybe some of that's posturing. And why do Chapman now and not wait is because Chapman would be with the Nationals.
Yeah.
And if the Yankees are waiting until 3 p.m. Monday to see exactly what comes around on Miller, then you've got to kind of wait and play that out. And I don't think they wanted to gamble on not having either Chapman or, you know, not having either one of those guys. I don't know they could have gotten Melanson. I don't think the Pirates would have dealt with them. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah,
that's a good point, too.
But you start going pretty far down the ladder in terms of closers you could acquire. So I think when they got a chance to get Chapman, they grabbed him. And they made the decision that with Torres, and I'm not sure 3 months ago I would have necessarily known they would have done this. I would have thought Baez might have been in play at that time. But they have three. If Gleyber Torres develops and becomes a big league shortstop within the next year, year and a half, which I think he will, then they have three young shortstops, and you can't really do that. Not when you have Ben Zobrist and Chris Bryant. The positions you would move shortstops to are kind of taken. So, you know, I guess their term is redundancy, and so they had built up a redundancy of really good young shortstops. So that's kind of what made Torres, in their minds, expendable. And I just think they grabbed Chapman because they didn't want to run any risk of being shut out.
Phil, let's move to the South side. We know multiple teams have reached out about Chris Sale. We know the Sox have been willing to listen. We also know that they're not really budging on their asking price, which is enormous. Where does this stand? And it also seems like no one in the baseball world thinks a deal is going to get done. Where does this stand with Chris Sale?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little more open-minded than most reporters, analysts, on the possibility that the White Sox will do a big starting pitcher trade. I don't rule out that they could wind up getting close on a Sale deal and substituting Quintana and making a Quintana deal and holding on to Sale, which would be a little bit less headline grabbing. But I think Jose Quintana is darn near as good as Chris Sale. So I don't make a huge distinction between those two guys. And I think there's a good chance they will trade one of those two guys. They're right to ask for the moon in this market because people are paying heavily to get it. And, you know, you have Dave Dombrowski of the Red Sox, history of paying very heavily to get proven parts. Texas Rangers, John Daniels, very, very aggressive, and a history of pulling off these kind of deals. And the White Sox are the number one seller supplier. Their history suggests they won't make a trade, and I think most people are going off that history. But talking to Rick Hahn the day it wasn't this week, but the previous week, 10 days ago now, at U.S. Cellular, where he used the phrase mired in mediocrity. He also said in that conversation, extremely open-minded to all options. I've never considered the White Sox that way. And to me, just in reading between the lines and what he said and what he didn't say, I saw an acknowledgement that, look, having these two starting pitchers is great, but if you can't put a lineup of three or four or five good young hitters around him, it's not going to get you anywhere. And that's what they've been trying to patch it up and win behind those guys since 2014. I mean, 13 was a disaster, but instead of folding, they went and signed Jose Abreu, and they've kept trying to build since then. The reason they did it is they're sure they could win behind Sale and Quintana. And Sale and Quintana have done their part, and it just hasn't worked. And I think that to keep trying to do that, you know, what's the definition of insanity? I think they're getting close to that because, you know, yeah, if you run a computer simulation, there's times when all the clickers could line up and you could win 90 plus games and go to a postseason with the players they've been putting on the field. But it's not a big, the odds aren't big. And even if you did win one year, you probably wouldn't pull it off another year. They need the young hitters. The Red Sox have Andrew Benintendi, who the Cubs, or the White Sox rather, coveted in the draft 2 years ago when they drafted Carson Fulmer 8. They would have taken Benintendi, but the Red Sox took him with the 7th pick, and he's been great for the Red Sox, and he's on the verge of the big leagues. They need a hitter like that. The guy they want from Texas is Nomar Mazara, who they most want. But, you know, Joey Gallo he strikes out a lot, and people make an Adam Dunn comparison. But the young Adam Dunn was very productive for the Reds and then the Nationals. You know, and Texas, Jurickson Profar theoretically could be in a deal. Texas has a lot of intriguing parts. So I just think that the White Sox have reached a point where they're honestly considering a different direction, a different approach than the one they've been using the last 3 years and probably longer. But I just date it back to the 99 loss season in 13 and coming out of that, what are they going to do? And their answer was bring in as many proven hitters on short contracts as you can and just hope it works.
Hey, Phil, before you get on out of here, I think it's pretty clear, you know, as far as philosophy changing here, that Chris Sale and Robin Ventura are not best of friends here. And I don't think they need to be, but, you know, he's saying that Robin needs to stick up for his players, and you're hearing more and more things that Robin has sent Chris Sale home before. This wasn't the first time that it happened last week. I mean, I'm guessing that Robin is for sure not back next season. But I'm also wondering how Chris Sale is viewed around the game. I don't think anybody wouldn't trade for him, but maybe some people are starting to think that he's a little kooky.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the uniforms, you know, 100% of people outside of the White Sox and 99.9% of the people with the White Sox thought that was crazy, over the top, and kooky, and the wrong way to handle things. So, you know, I think Sale is, I think he's respected for his ability, but he seems a little bit over his skis and you know, in the post-Paul Konerko White Sox clubhouse leadership void, he seems to have kind of put himself in a position you don't see a lot of starting pitchers in, and he's starting to, I don't know that it hurts his value, but, and I don't really, I think you're right about Robin. It seems very unlikely to me that the White Sox will do a new contract with him past the one that ends at the end of this year. I'm not sure from either side it makes sense to continue this. And he's the only manager in White Sox history who's ever been retained for a fourth season after three straight losing seasons. I was surprised he was back this year.
Me too.
Yeah. Hey. And I'm also just sort of, well, I'm not surprised at all, but it seems like to let this thing play out, it's too late now. But the way the season was going, it's sort of unfortunate not to see how things would have played out if they had tried to shake things up mid-season. Because what was there really to lose?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. But I thought sticking with Robin, you know, I thought like he was the right guy to handle the Adam LaRoche thing. You know, he did get him past that.
Did he? I mean, like, I don't feel like he did anything.
Well, and by not doing anything, by not overreacting, you know, I he knew that was a tempest in a teacup, and it would go away, and it did. And, you know, his handling things behind closed doors, I think, in that case, worked. But generally, I think we overrate significance of managers, positive and negative.
Right.
My long-held take on it is a handful of really good managers impact games, and a handful of really bad managers can impact games. Most managers, you know, it always comes down to the talent on the field, and I think that's what's happened with the White Sox. I'm surprised. Well, they really have, you know, the one thing that's changed, and don't lose sight of this, the one thing that has changed is the Cleveland Indians, they're on like a 95-win pace. If not for the Indians' record since May 15th or whenever they turned it up, you know, we'd be talking about an American League Central where 87 games might win the division, and we'd be looking at the White Sox differently. You know, I thought the White Sox would, you know, and could easily win 85, 87 games, and they certainly, with that 23-10 start, gave themselves a great chance of doing it. And they fell off precipitously. But if you just looked at their record, I think the biggest thing that's changed is the Indians are on a pace to win mid-90s last time I looked.
Yeah, I'm with you a lot on the Sox. It's just sort of another whatever year for them.
You know, and the conclusion we get back to, I think, is why they have to consider Sale Quintana trades. It's all about young talent. And
yep.
They stripped their farm system down. They gave away a decade of international signings, and they've traded veterans without bringing in, using the draft to replenish the system. And it catches up to you. And it caught up to them a long time ago, and they can't get out from under it. And I don't really see that much help within the system. So I think you've got to do, like, even the Padres. I think the Padres have had a great year for rebuilding their organization. And the White Sox need to look at that and figure out a way to bring in some impact young guys that you can build around for 5 or 6 years.
Phil, great stuff as always. Appreciate you jumping on, my friend. We'll talk to you in August here as post-deadline and a little playoff push.
All right, and tell Amy, I think it's her Texan.
Yeah, and you should check Twitter. She's writing at you on Twitter, thanking you for what you said. So check it out.
All right, we'll see you later.
Okay.
Thanks, Phil.
Phil Rogers, MLB.com with us here on 720 WGN. 6 o'clock hour, whole lot of Bears footballs. This is The Beat, 720 WGN. It's never enough. More happen, OB with Kaz.
Bears. Hey, I have a quick thought on Chris Sale before we hit the news here.
Sure.
After everything that happened with the jerseys,
uh-huh,
this dude comes out, talks to Scott Merkin, and throws his manager under the bus.
I know. It's unbelievable. It's great.
How is that acceptable?
It's
they should have tacked on to a suspension after that.
Robin's got to learn to step up for his players. You need to learn to be quiet.
After everything that happened, that's what you do?
Yeah, he's a little out over his skis. Well put by Phil Rogers, who Amy Guth tweeted at and said, "Hey, ha, at Phil Rogers, thank you for what you said about me on at WGN Radio. Viva always, thinking minds."
Now back to The Beat.
720 WGN.
Final hour of the show on this Saturday afternoon in Chicago. Hope everyone's having a good day. Plenty of, I've spent my last 3 days, 4 days. How many days? 4 days. In Bourbonnais, getting you all your Bears news. Had a really good conversation with Bears tight end Zach Miller, who is just a guy you want to root for. I mean, all the injuries he's had in his career, he finally has a breakout season last year, gets the contract extension with the Chicago Bears, wants to be with the Chicago Bears. We talked about all that and a lot more. Here's my conversation with Bears tight end Zach Miller. Here with Zach Miller on The Beat. Zach, you get the contract in the offseason, re-signing with the Bears.
so many past seasons, you've kind of been on these one-year-at-a-time type deals. How's it different?
My approach isn't different. I mean, I don't want to say a sense of security, because if you ever relax, you're not improving. It's just like I feel like I'm home. You know, I don't know if that sounds weird or not, but I feel like I'm in a place where I'm wanted. I understand the expectations, and it's just a good position to be in.
I know when we talked to you after you re-signed, you mentioned how important it was to keep playing with Jay. Yeah. How has that relationship continued to grow, and is you're kind of one of his go-to guys now?
I mean, it's just, I love being on the football field with him. Just to see, like, his leadership that has grown so much since I've been here, and just see the way that he interacts, and it's like rewarding just to come back and communicate with him. And, you know, what did you see here? Long
horn. Nice.
You know, what he sees, what I see, and just for us to work together and be on the same page a lot, it's just fun. You know, I love the dude off the field, and it's fun playing football with your friends.
When you look back on the couple years you were hurt, and at least with the Bears, and the whether it was still the Phil Emery era or when Ryan Pace came in here, just that year where you kind of sat there and you were looking at the film, and yet, you know, two regimes kind of took a chance on you and kept you here, and then you kind of had the rewarding season last year. How much did that factor into your decision to stay?
Well, I mean, you reward loyalty, and loyalty rewards you. You know, for both of those guys, starting with Phil to give me a shot coming off, you know, being out of football, and then, you know, for Ryan to give me another one coming off a significant injury, just it means the world to me to be able to continue my dream and then put myself and my family in the position that we are. So, thankfully, you know, they took that shot, and I took advantage of it. So, super blessed. Can't thank them and the organization enough for doing that for me.
You're kind of the elder statesman now in the tight end room. A lot of young guys there. Yeah. A lot of guys that I think Bears fans need to get used to and learn their names still. What's that room been like?
It's a great group, man. You got a group of hungry young guys that are just willing to work. They do it the right way. They come in, and you really... they do everything right. Everybody strives for perfection. You know, it's a difficult thing in professional sports, but they're trying to learn every single day, along with myself. I mean, if you are never trying to learn on a daily basis, you're not getting any better. So we just got a really good group of guys in that room.
How did things change when the pads go on?
Intensity will go up just a hair initially on that first day, just because we haven't been in pads for so long. And then it's just really dialing in more technique, opposed to you're kind of reaching for things that you can't reach for without pads on. So it's just back to real football. Technique will need to be dialed in, and the intensity will probably bump up a hair.
As you try to build on last season, what are you kind of personally honing in on, things that you want to improve?
You just got to, obviously for me, work on your weaknesses. And you know, you work to make your weaknesses your strength. Obviously, early in my career, I was not known to be a blocker. I feel like last year, being able to work with Frank and him help me in that aspect has really improved my game to a point where I can stay on the football field and actually enjoy it a little bit. You know, there's a weird, fulfilling feeling to make a good block. So that's something that I'm working on a daily basis, and obviously that'll improve more when you get pads on as well.
At what point did you kind of learn that appreciation? Whether it was some play where you made a nice block on the outside and the guy, you know, went the distance? How long did that take?
To do it consistently, it was probably last year was the first time that I actually felt good doing it. The first time I ever did it, probably 2010 in Jacksonville, we're running a bubble screen, and Cortland Finnegan went to jump it, and I smoked him. And that thing got out the gate, and I was like, man, I was important on that play. I didn't touch the ball, but I was important. And now as you get into it and you see, you know, running backs hitting a hole, and maybe a 4 to 6 yard game, but you understand that football's 11 guys on offense have to do everything right. Mm-hmm. To be successful. So you understand you're a part of something, whether you have the ball or not.
You still have video of that block somewhere, like on YouTube or something? You find it?
I don't know. We might be able to. I think I have it on a DVD. I said all my plays from Jacksonville that I like, so I might have it in the archives.
Last thing for you as we let you go, having Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey out there, even out here with shorts in the first 2 days, you can just sort of sense there's a different dynamic with this offense.
Talking about two very explosive guys. Combine them with the rest of the guys in the slot, with Eddie, Mark, Cam's been playing well. Really, that whole group, Bellamy, I mean, from the top down, you got some playmakers there, but obviously Alshon and having Kevin back, he's explosive. Guy can run. Exciting for me.
Yeah.
You know, you got two dogs outside. Throw a guy like Eddie or Mark in the slot, and then maybe let me run around. They got a couple of other guys opposed to me, so it puts a whole package together for Jay to have a lot of weapons to go to.
Zach, appreciate the time, man.
Anytime, bro.
Zach Miller, Bears tight end. Really your go-to tight end this year. He's going to have to stay healthy. He's going to have to be productive.
It's really a bold contract and a bold expectation that Zach Miller, who's been hurt his entire career, is going to stay healthy, be productive, block better, which was cool to hear him talk about that right there. Saying, I mean, you're really asking a lot from a guy who's never done it, and he's been in the league off and on for nearly 10 years. That's the reality.
Yeah.
So
I asked that question, like, when did it click for you blocking? And he said last year.
Right.
I was expecting he was going to go deeper in his career, but that's sort of the reality. You know, I liked what Ryan Pace said the other day, though. He's very honest about the tight end situation. He said, look, when you're in year two of trying to rebuild a program, you can't hit every single need. That's just him being candid for a second. Like, you can't just in 2 years hit every single position on your roster. And then part of this is what they're doing is changing the attitude. And they felt like they had to get Martellus Bennett out of here.
We're going to talk to not Ryan Pace coming back here because you just kind of stepped into it. I really want to hear from not Ryan Pace because he's very interesting and enjoyable. And we also have an interview that you did with Eddie Goldman, and the Bears have a contract extension with one of their defensive linemen who probably was their best defensive lineman last year in Willie Young. I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, he's outside linebacker.
Oh, well, okay. Whatever. The whole 4-3-3-4, whatever. He rushes the quarterback. He's a pass rusher.
He's a pass rusher.
Okay.
You could say that. He was their best
pass
rusher.
I don't even think Hamp would correct me on that, but I appreciate that you did.
Well, actually, Willie would be mad that I corrected you because he still calls himself a defensive end.
Okay, but technically he's an outside linebacker.
He's an outside linebacker.
He's a defensive end.
He wears
wears number 97. He's a defensive end.
That's outside linebacker number, too.
Not really. He puts his hand...
Yes, it is really. Lamar Houston wears number 99, outside linebacker.
Lamar Houston is a defensive lineman. He is. Whatever.
They play with their hand off the ground.
So
2-point stance.
I don't care.
They have to drop back in coverage. They're no longer defensive linemen. Sorry, Mark. Sorry, Willie.
They line up opposite the offensive line and they rush the quarterback, correct?
Sometimes they drop back into coverage.
Very rarely. Okay, fine. And I understand that Lawrence Taylor did the same thing and he was a linebacker. But these guys have like been defensive linemen their whole career. We'll move along. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Not Ryan Pace. You don't want to miss him. He's next, along with some Eddie Goldman on 720 WGN. He's Adam Hoge. I'm Mark Carman. Pleased to be joined in a matter of moments by Not Ryan Pace.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, it's Not Ryan Pace. Ryan, I got a couple questions here with camp opening, if I may, and I don't want to go too far here and make you uncomfortable, but...
Yeah, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I got some questions here, and I know that this is a big year for you guys, and, you know, you were just talking about earlier in the week how you can't fix everything, but, you know, you put such an emphasis on the defense this year. I don't know if you guys are going to score. I mean, no Matt Forte, no Martellus Bennett. And you got some unproven receivers. I mean, how are you going to score the football?
Well, guys, you know, sometimes you have to make hard decisions, and we just really we had to say goodbye to some guys in the offseason, but we brought some younger guys in. We drafted Jordan Howard out of Indiana. He's going to run the football for us, and you know, I really think we're going to come around.
What about your head coach, Not Ryan Pace? I mean, when I listen to him,
yeah,
you know, he really. I just find him to be miserably boring and not interesting and defensive and uninteresting. And I just don't get why you know you would want that to be the face of your franchise week in and week out.
I think if you really took the time to get to know the real John Fox, you would understand that John's a really cool guy. He's really cool. He's a guy that we really want to be leading this franchise, and he's a leader of men, and we really like the direction that he's taking this team right now.
Not Ryan Pace joining us here on 720 WGN. Not Ryan. When I look at Jay Cutler, I see a guy who should be a leader but just isn't, flat out. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he's aloof.
You know, Mark, I don't really like your tone right now.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I'm speaking for Bears fans everywhere that they look at Cuddy and they want more from leadership. I mean, you have to see this too. You're the general manager.
I don't think you watched a single game last year, Mark. Jay was really, really good leader. He led us on and off the field. You know, I was listening to their last segment. Did you hear what Zach Miller was saying about Jay?
No, I guess
he really, really wanted to be here for Jay Cutler.
Yeah, but he's got to say that. He's got to say that, not Ryan. He's not going to dog his quarterback. Come on.
Can I just dive into this conversation right here real quick? Adam Hogue, WGN Radio.
No, hold on. I got one more for not Ryan, then you can be Adam.
You really don't buy what Zach was saying about Jay?
Not completely, no.
Dude, all right, let me take you back to the conference call after Zach signed that extension.
Okay.
He brought that up on his own. He was asked simply, why did you re-sign with the Bears? He started first with his family, keeping them in Chicago, loves the area, and then he goes, right there, number two, playing with Jay Cutler.
Okay, fine.
Brought it up on his own.
Yeah, but okay, that's fine. That might be number two. But number one and number 1A and number 1B and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 7 and 10, it was the money and the contract that nobody else was giving him. Okay, and then after that, he likes Jay.
I think there was interest out there.
To that level of dollars?
Well, the Bears would only give him what the market was. That's why he got to the point where he actually hit the open market.
Okay. I'm still believing that the Bears offered him the most money of anyone. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's fine. He likes Jay. Great. Cuddy.
2 years, $6 million contract. Wait, that's the wrong Zach Miller. That always happens. Hang on. Remember Zach Miller, tight end for the Seattle Seahawks?
Let me make mention here. Jay Cutler was the MVP of the team last year. Jay Cutler had a phenomenal season. Jay Cutler's contract is no longer overpaid. In fact, he's closer to underpaid than he is overpaid in today's NFL. All of that is great.
2 years, $5.5 million.
And that's not a lot of money, okay, as far as NFL goes.
It's a solid contract. That means there was interest out there from other teams.
I'm not saying there wasn't. I'm sure there was, and I think the Bears paid him the most. And therefore he's a Chicago Bear. If the St. Louis Rams, or rather the Los Angeles Rams, or the Oakland Raiders, or San Francisco 49ers had offered Zach Miller 2 years and $6 million, or probably 2 years and $5.6 million, bye-bye. You know, I really just want to play with Colin Kaepernick. I've always liked Colin Kaepernick. I mean, if it's not him, Blaine Gabbert is amazing too. And you know what? I
think you're wrong on this one.
Really?
I really think that he wanted to reward the loyalty that the Bears showed him. Two different regimes showed him loyalty, gave him a chance. You look at this guy's career path. I really do think that he wanted to stay with the Bears. Now, if it was a huge difference, like $3 million...
$300,000.
What?
If somebody offered him...
If someone offered him $300,000 more...
Yes.
He stays with the Bears.
I want to have that conversation with him. I'd leave for $300,000.
In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if that was actually the case. I didn't know that this was such an issue. Otherwise, I would have asked him in that interview.
I mean, I'm just... Okay, there's no issue here. There's zero issues. But
Mark, you're really trying to make something out of nothing here.
I am, but just listen. But my point is this. Whenever I talk to anybody in the game, any agent, any coach, any former player, about where guys are going to go.
The money is, yes.
They always say
and
the
I'm
money.
Not naive to that.
Okay.
I think this is a special circumstance, though. I really do.
Why? He needs the money more than anyone. He hasn't
made plenty of money.
He's never made huge dollars. He's got to suck every last bit that he can get here for a guy that's been injured his whole career. And this is, You know, he's not a $100 million guy.
You're right, though. He has never actually made over. Looks like
my father's calling on line one. If you could pick that up, Dan, I'm going to get yelled at.
$660,000 last year was the most he had ever made.
Right. He's gonna go for the dough, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Five seasons, $2.49 million, but he deserved it after last year.
And again,
back to my original point.
I don't know if he deserves a 2-year deal. Although you can always get offered under an
NFL. If he wasn't getting any other offers from anywhere else, then he would be on a minimum salary benefit deal.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
If there were no offers from other teams, the Bears, he'd be playing for minimum salary right now.
Okay, fine.
You are what the market says you're worth.
That's fine. I'm with you. I agree. What did my dad want?
He wanted you to give him a call when you get a chance.
Oh, okay, good. Is that the
I was lighter this year.
Isn't that the best? Is that maybe a bad son that my dad feels like he knows?
He has to call 312-991-7200.
I mean, I have my phone right
say,
here.
I
have a voicemail.
Son, please call me.
I have a voicemail from 250. Let's see if Papa called. Papa Fred.
Do we have a break here?
We got to get a break in.
Do we have a break here?
Yeah. All right. Okay.
We'll hear from the real Ryan Pace.
Real Ryan Pace, real Eddie Goldman. I have a tribute. I want to give props to I got to umpire at U.S. Cellular Field for the police and the fire department, which was incredibly cool. I want to talk about that, too. And then Amy Guth's coming up at 7.
All right.
720 WGN.
What in the why?
Chicago sports spoken here.
What in the sports is going on here?
This is The Beat.
This song always gets me, like, jacked for college football.
This gets me jacked for life, baby.
Third down, right here. It's 3rd and 8. Got to get a big stop.
773 texting in right along with the song. I hope Luna the dog pees on Carmen's pillow. It's not nice.
I got peed on by a cat once on Christmas Eve when I was sleeping on a couch. I was sleeping on the cat's couch, apparently. And she let me know about it.
Getting peed on by animal, no good. Getting the dog has peed all over my place, so you should not on my pillow. But I've had to clean up a significant amount of urine this week, so you can take satisfaction in that. 773.
You ever have a dog get even with you for not getting away from the video game console?
I don't know what that means.
A friend of mine had an old Atari. This goes back a bit. He had a Samoyed Husky.
Yeah.
She wanted to go out. He was busy playing a video game. She finished the game for him.
All right.
Yep.
Well,
just what you're thinking she did. You just brought it up.
All over the Atari?
Uh-huh. Peed right in it.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Jennings and hashtag Atari, which was a great gaming system. That and in television. That was my childhood. Adam Hogue, did you have Atari? Or Nintendo?
I had regular Nintendo, yeah. Did you hear they're reselling that?
I did see.
There's a new one coming out. It's going to come preloaded with 80 games, and it's not even that expensive. It's like the price of one Xbox game. All right.
Back to Ryan Pace.
Yeah, the real Ryan Pace spoke today. I was there. Bears made a move. Willie Young, 2-year extension. He's going to be with the team for 3 more years. What do you think?
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Let's hear what Ryan Pace had to say about the extension for Willie Young.
I guess, hey, real quick, Willie Young, 3-year contract, 2-year extension. It's our first contract extension here, so excited about that. Excited for Willie, excited for the Bears. You know, we did this, you know, everything he brings to the table. You know, he's a productive player, he's a good player, and most importantly, he's a good teammate. So we got this done late last night. It's something we've been working on for a while. I know Willie's fired up, and we're fired up to get them under contract extension. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Ryan, what was your interaction with Willie this morning or last night?
It was late last night, so we went a little past his curfew. So he was excused. But it was about 11:30 last night. We were able to finalize everything. And it's just really good. It feels good to reward somebody that's worked as hard as he's worked. You know, and overcoming the injury last year and the leader that he is out there and mentoring our younger players. And I feel really good about it. I think it's good for our locker room. It's good for our team.
He's always been a defensive end. And obviously with the switched outside linebacker, he's coming off an injury last year. When did you know that he could fit in this type of defense?
I'd say probably midway through last year. You know, you could just feel him getting comfortable, you know, and then now he's getting so many reps now. The dropping and coverage and those things are becoming easier for him. So I still think he's going to get better in this scheme the more reps he gets. But he's a well-rounded player, man. He's, you know, he works hard. He's always in shape. And, again, he's a good teammate. Yeah.
Brian, what was the impetus for this getting done last night as opposed to another time? Like, what happened in the last, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours?
It, you know, there, obviously there's always a couple little tweaks here and there, but for the most part it was just kind of, you know, just us just coming to a common ground, you know. And I think it's a good time to do it before we get into the preseason for him, you know. And, again, we feel good about it.
You said 3-year deal, 2-year extension. Did you rework parts of this year's?
Yeah, I don't want to get into the specifics of the contract, but that's the length. Yeah.
How impressed were you with the way he handled everything last year with switching positions and he wasn't – too keen on that, still calling himself a defensive end, but the attitude that he took to continue to work hard and just kind of do what he does. What does that say about him?
That's all those things combined to help us do this, you know, made us feel good about doing this. So it's not just the type of the player he is on the field. It's all those things you're referencing too, you know. I mean, you know, he just keeps his head down and just works, you know, and I appreciate that about him. And I feel like he's still getting better, you know, with this scheme. And you know, earlier in his career, you know, he was kind of more of a sub player, and he's getting more opportunities now, and I think he'll capitalize on those.
What about his skill set makes you think it's going to age well?
He takes care of his body. You know, he doesn't let himself get overweight or out of shape. You know, he eats healthy. He fishes a lot. I kind of feel like it's a player a little low mileage a little bit, you know, and we just feel good about it.
Ryan, it's not always that a player recovers from a surgery like that and becomes what he once was. Was there anything that he did or the Bears did in his rehab that kind of made it happen?
He worked so hard, Mark, through that whole process. And, again, you know how much confidence I have in our training staff. So those two together, they worked hard. And as you watch the tape and we analyze everything, you know, there was no hitch or anything with his play. He was fully healthy and playing at a high level. And I think – we'll play at an even higher level this season. We're excited about that.
So there you go, Ryan Pace. I prefer not Ryan Pace.
Really?
312-981-7200. Ryan Pace or not Ryan Pace? What was your big takeaway from that?
Well, I identified Willie Young as a guy who I thought could make the switch too from the 4-3 to the 3-4. And just looking at his length and quickness, I thought it could work. But he had never played in a 3-4 in his entire career, so it was still something that I think they had to wait and see. But, I mean, he is 30, but I thought Ryan Pace brought up a good point. Low mileage. This is not a guy. When he was in Detroit, he wasn't playing every down.
Right.
And then he played a lot for the Bears that first season, but then he got hurt, and last year he was a little limited too. I'll tell you what, man. He and Lamar Houston, today was the first padded practice. One of my favorite days of the year. Pads go on, they line up, they go one-on-one in offensive line, defensive line drills. You can find out right away who can play and who can't. Willie Young, Lamar Houston dominated today. Right off the bat. Both look really good. And people don't realize that Lamar Houston ended up leading the team in sacks and played very, very well down the stretch last year, living up to that contract. Which it's been a rough first 2 years for him, as a Bear. Season one ended
it was
very
awful.
Prematurely with celebrating.
Great sack when the Bears were down 40 to the Patriots. He didn't even get Brady, right? He got Garoppolo?
Yeah, and I think it was his second sack of the year.
No, it was his first. It was his first. That's why he celebrated, because he hadn't had a sack and he just let it all out. And then he blew out his knee. That was awesome. That really was one of the great moments in Bear history.
You're such a jerk.
When 99.
That was awesome.
It was so completely spot on to how that season
it,
had gone.
Yeah, it really fit in 20. Yeah. Getting back to our basketball game last night, so I made the comparison that the first game where we lost 15-0 to the Bears media relations staff, if you're just joining us.
Didn't the Bears media relations staff send out a release about that?
There has been a release sent out as a joke. I don't think it was sent out to all the media. I think it was probably just sent to us who played. I can't tell. But so I was like, so the first game where we lost 15-0, we were the 2014 Bears.
Right.
Then
we got better. We were the 2015 Bears. We didn't win, but we got close, right?
Sure.
And then if we kept playing, 2016, baby.
Oh, yeah. No, you had it.
Playoffs.
Let's see here. We got some texts coming in on the Bears. One from the 708. I have two bets with two friends that the Bears will win 8 games this year. I should collect by week 15, right? Okay, so that's betting on the Bears being good, I'm assuming.
Yeah, if they got 8 wins by week 15, that's 8-6 with 2 games remaining.
I think that text is forgetting there are 17 weeks with the bye, perhaps, but taking that out of the equation. The Bears' schedule is pretty difficult at the start, correct?
If you remember. Well, it's interesting because it looked pretty easy early because you're playing the AFC South, but so is the whole division. So is the whole NFC North. So the Packers are playing the AFC South too. And the reality is the Jaguars are getting better. The Titans are getting better. Now, I don't know how much better. It wouldn't surprise me if the Jags are in the hunt this year. The Titans maybe need another year. But those games, at least they're at home. Those are games you got to win. You go on the road, though, to the Texans. That's not easy. Now, you may catch a break if J.J. can't go. But my guess, if I know J.J. Watt, he's going to get out there for week one. Interesting story today, by the way, for the real diehard NFL fans. DeAndre Hopkins, their best wide receiver, didn't report to camp.
$40,000 a day getting fined for not showing up to camp.
Now, chances are like it worked out by the season.
Can you imagine that? Yeah. No, I'm not happy with my contract. I'm not going to show up. It's going to cost you 40 G a day. 40 G. Yo, yeah, that's cool. I don't need that 40 G. I'll make it back tomorrow.
Unbelievable. And then the Colts, too, on the road. The Colts are going to be a lot better than they were last year. So, yeah, you're right. The schedule is not easy. And not easy early, because you got the Texans, the Cowboys. Who am I forgetting? Week two, the Eagles on Monday Night Football.
A lot of the schedule this year, like last year, was all noon games. Early this year, they're jumping all around. I don't know if that matters. It probably doesn't.
They have a lot of primetime early.
Yeah, they play. They open up at Houston on 9/11. Then on Monday night with the Eagles at home, that's your first home game. Then they're at Dallas. Then home with Detroit. Then at Indy. Home with the Jags. At Green Bay. Home with the Vikings. At Tampa. At the Giants. Whatever. We don't need to go wholly deep in the schedule. But like, I feel like you could go 0-1 with the Texans.
You're right over there.
I just died. 0-1 in the Texans with the new. But you are getting Brock Osweiler in game one. So maybe you can get him. But then you're home with Philly.
Hey, Brock Osweiler beat the Bears last year.
Yeah, well, he had a little bit of a better defense than what
the Bears were in that game. They had a 2-point conversion right at the end of the game. Could have won.
That's true. They did. Hey, we're going to hear a little bit of Eddie Goldman coming up here.
Yeah, I talked to Eddie as well today. Had a good conversation with him. Hey, Eddie Goldman, the Bears are expecting him to be a beast. I mean,
big Eddie. You know who likes Eddie Goldman? Ed Obradovich is an Eddie Goldman fan.
Can we get OB on soon?
Sure, let's get OB on.
I would love to talk football.
Let's talk some OB. Well, next week we'll have OB on.
Let's do that.
All right. So we'll wrap up with Eddie Goldman, and we'll get you ready for Amy Guth. And I want to talk about my incredible umpiring at U.S. Cellular Field. No one has done it better. 720 WGN.
Sorry.
720 WGN.
Got to cram a lot into this last segment. Well, talk to Eddie Goldman today. Bears nose tackle. Supposed to make a huge step forward in year two. I asked him today how different did it feel versus this time last year?
I was lighter this year, and I was more like quicker with my steps, and I know like everything that's coming, so it's like it's easy, not easy, but like it's calming. You know what I mean?
Is there a moment? Because obviously, you know, we've talked about you dropping some pounds and trying to keep that the strength, agility, and everything. Is there a moment where you can go, all right, it's working?
Nah. You can't really say like, okay, it's where you got to keep working.
Yeah.
You know, point being, and. You know, you never could, like, settle. and just think you arrived. You know, you just got to keep finding new ways to improve yourself.
Do you feel the, I don't want to say pressure, but you know that this team's counting on you this year, that you're kind of the guy in that middle spot. You feel that coming into camp?
I mean, every D lineman on every team feels that, you know what I mean? Because, I say O-line and D-line, you know what I mean? Because it's the line, first line of defense, and that's the heart and soul of the offense and defense, you know what I mean? So every year, no matter what team I've been on, yeah, I feel the pressure.
How much pride do you guys take into those one-on-one drills?
A lot of pride, man, because when it's camp, it's almost like O-line and D-line aren't on the same team as far as, like, on the field, you know? But when practice is going, it's like we're a different team. We're competing. We're trying to get the wins as far as, like, the one-on-one battles and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's cool, man.
Do the coaches kind of encourage that? I mean, offense, defense going up against each other? Because it's a fine line, too, because you are on the same team.
You mean, like, draw us against each other? Like, we got to get them. They got to.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's, like, implied.
I think that's a big difference, by the way, between the John Fox era and the Mark Trestman era. You can tell when those guys are out there and the pads are on, they are competing against each other. Yeah, they're on the same team. Yeah, they're all Chicago Bears, but they want to beat each other. Trestman was so worried about guys not getting hurt, not going to the ground, that it was like that was the priority. Let's all be nice. And it doesn't work in the NFL, man. It just doesn't work. And you heard Hamp and OB rant about that all the time, and they should have. Real quick with Eddie Goldman, I want to fast forward a little bit in that conversation and talk about the expectations for this Bears defense.
Man, it's been great because it's like we're meshing together well. You know, we got Akeem. He's like a high-energy guy. We got Danny. Danny, he's He's, I can't explain it, man. He's like, he looks small, but he brings the bump. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say he looks small, but I mean, he has to communicate, like, with everybody. But, you know, when we make the play, it's like, you know, he celebrates and stuff like that. And then we got Freeman, man. He's a dog, too. I mean, I ain't going to go through everybody, but, I mean, I think we're going to be top 10 this year. I'm not going to. Don't quote me on that.
That's fair, though. You guys were middle of the pack last year. That's fair.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, expectations, dog. That's what I expect. That's what everybody expects, though. Top 10 or number one, you know?
Or number one.
I like it.
I love it.
I like it a lot.
Well, he wanted, you could tell he didn't want to make a prediction like that, but then I jumped in and I said, look, I think top 10's completely fair for you to say because you were middle of the pack last year. You move up four spots, you're top 10. It's not that hard. You should be top 10.
You backed him. I like that. Hey, somebody scrawny and tall just stepped into the studio. We're going to take a quick time out, and we're going to talk to her when we come on back here, so we'll be on time, and I want to give credit to the Fox Valley Blues FVB.com organization, too. 720 WGN.